2-2 and a swing and a miss to get him, and the A's will win it. The Blue Jays come up one run short. The A's snap the Jays' three-game winning streak, and they take the opener of the series by a score of 5-4.
Thornton to the line. Muzzin. His shot deflected, scores. Another quick stick from Austin Matthews, and it's 39 on the year. Toffoli back up top. Suzuki's got some room. Down low it goes. Scores. Montreal has tied it. Phil Deneau at the side of the net. Off the bench comes Caulfield. Shooting, scores. The kid's done it again. Cole Caulfield, game winner, Montreal.
May the 4th be with you and all that good stuff. Would you ever dress up to go to a movie as an adult? Like, it's different with kids. But would you ever dress up to go to a theater and sit there and watch a movie? Because it seems to happen with Star Wars more than any other franchise.
Like, would I go full Chewbacca at the movie theater?
Well, could you go full Chewbacca?
Yes, I would. I would definitely. If I had to go as anything, I would go Chewbacca.
You throw like a massive Mantar type suit on or something and just... big woolly mammoth. Silent Nick in my ear saying, what all he's got to do is take off his shirt. The big woolly mammoth.
Yeah, who's Silent Vic kidding? He shaves his back every morning. yeah, would I go Chewbacca or Darth Vader? I don't know. Sure, why not? I don't know. Like,
you've picked the only two costumes where your face wouldn't be seen. I'm on to you. I'm on to you.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I've never seen anybody dressed. Have you seen anybody?
Oh, yeah, at Star Wars? At Star Wars movies?
Come on.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen people dressed up?
Sure. Absolutely. And you know, because this is going to throw you a bit of a curveball here, I always come to their defense when they're criticized. We dress up to go to sports games.
Support the team.
Yeah. We put on jerseys. Some adults. Like, how many times have you gone to a hockey game or a baseball game, and there's somebody with full face paint? And a jersey and double fisting beers, just screaming at the players. And you go, that guy is getting up tomorrow morning to go to work.
There are certain age limits for different things at sporting events. Jerseys, I feel like anybody can kind of get away with them. But if you're over... to get in trouble here, are you just sitting back and gonna have a coffee on this one?
Hey, I brought my thermos. I'm just gonna have a few swigs here.
You want to see where I'm going with
bring
this?
Bring the shovel. Yeah, we got a Soprano situation
I
here.
Feel
bring
like,
the shovel.
I feel like around the age of 30, outside of a sporting event, I feel like that's the age where you can't wear jerseys in public. I feel like that's in and around 30. If you're going to a game, I don't mind stretching it out a couple years, but after that, I don't think you're allowed to wear a jersey. The face paint, I'm going to say the face paint at 16, 17, 18. I think anything over that, I don't know. I don't see many 20-year-olds with face paint on. I feel like it's either the kids or it's a group of people that get really drunk at the games. And they're going to make a spectacle of it, or somebody loses a bet. But I just think there's certain ages where you can't wear jerseys and the face paint. You can't do it. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Kids are off limits. Kids can do whatever they want.
Yes,
they're living in the fantasy world of it all, right? And then some of them are aspiring to be those players 10, 15 years down the road and all that stuff. I'm talking about adults. Yeah, I can't remember where I first heard this, but I think I've stuck to it, and it wasn't like a conscious thing, but the notion of wearing a jersey of a player who is like a lot younger than you. Like if I bought an Austin Matthews or a Mitch Marner jersey, like these guys are 20 years younger than I am, but all my jerseys were Sundin and McCabe and Tucker, guys who are older than me I was slightly younger then as I watched them play for the Maple Leafs, right? And so I was Jersey guy back in my teens and 20s.
So you're going to go, if the player was older than you when you were a young kid, it's fine to wear it, and there's no age limit on that.
Well, I'll never.
That's what you're going with?
Yeah, but you and I, we do some things sometimes. Like game one of the playoffs, the Leafs will be in game one of the playoffs here in a couple of weeks. I mean, God knows whenever the Vancouver Canucks decide their season's over. Can we just get that over with, please? But whenever the Leafs play game one of the playoffs, I think that'll be a jersey day. But I got Tucker McCabe.
Yeah, I'll wear the Leafs jersey. First game of the playoffs, yes, I'm in for a Leafs jersey. I have a Leafs jersey when I was a kid. It does not fit anymore. It was a 6 or 7 year old Wendell Clark Leafs replica. It's like barely together. I don't even know if I have any other Leaf jerseys. I'm like, I don't think I do.
You don't have your own?
Well, I have my own, but
okay,
it's like
it's
buried in some box. You can't wear your own jersey.
Oh, you could absolutely. Dude, you're one of the few people who can.
If I don't get one by the first game of the playoffs, fine. I'm going to see if I can order one.
You should be out front cutting your lawn with your own jersey on. Why not? Let them all know who you are.
Yeah.
Show Doris who's got the power.
Yeah, no. Doris doesn't know who the Toronto Maple Leafs are. Don't worry about it. I bet you if you went to Doris, you said, you know the Toronto Maple Leafs are, she would have no clue.
And even less interest? Is that what you're suggesting?
No clue, wouldn't care, couldn't care less.
By the way, before we get into all the sports news in the morning, and there is plenty, is there anything going on with Doris, or has it been a...
Yeah, it's been really quiet, and it's been great. Yeah, the whole block's been under... I don't have any neighbors coming up to me complaining about Doris, so it's been a good couple months, actually. Yeah, nothing to...
I'm almost disappointed by that, because every now and then I come to you for a Doris story.
Well, I'm trying to be positive today, but...
We're peeling the onion back. We're going to get a Doris story.
There is something that happened about a month back. I don't know what happened. Maybe I'll run it by you. You can give me some advice. I don't know if it's Doris or not, but maybe we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about this off the air or on the air. Yeah, I mean, because you've now given the listener a tease. People want Doris updates.
Okay. Well, you tell me this. So I go to empty out, you know how you have you have your garbage bin, your recycling bin, and you have your compost.
Yes.
So I have all those bins on Doris's side by the fence that's only 3 feet high. I have a little fence between us in the front. I go to empty that out because sometimes I empty out my compost in my backyard. I have 3 big bins of compost that makes dirt out of it. You leave it in there for a couple of years. You turn it over. Anyways, that's how compost is made. And I went to dump it out in there. And... there was a bag of dog poop in it when I dumped it out in. So then I'm like, did Doris put a bag of dog poop?
And Doris
has
a dog or some dogs?
I don't think so. And that's where I'm getting a little confused. I don't think there's a dog. I think Doris's sister lives next door to her on the other side. Maybe they got the bag from there. And then dumped it in my compost. I know you can compost it. Just the thought of it in the compost making dirt that you're going to use to grow vegetables is not the best visual.
These carrots were made with the love of the droppings of a Great Dane.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, and I don't want to jump to conclusions, and that's why I didn't even want to bring it up. But if you wanted to say, is everything in the clear? Yeah, we're good. That happened. I didn't blow it out. I didn't grab the bag and toss it on her side, but I just safely deposited it in the garbage and went my way.
Okay, well, then Doris is not your neighbor's real name, and nobody knows where you live. So, I mean, this could be happening anywhere in the world right now. Not necessarily north of the 401 and east of the 404. It could be anywhere in the world, right now. Leafs lose in overtime to Montreal, so they had the game. And then they give up the equalizer inside the final minute, lose in overtime. If you had Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner not coming up with a shot on goal on a 2-on-0 on your bingo card, congratulations.
You blew it!
Well, congratulations, you win on the bingo card. But I don't think you will ever see Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner flub a 2-on-0 again like they did in overtime, but that happens sometimes. I think the story of this game, Ziggy, they end up with a point. They're going to win the North Division. I know the Oilers got to 2 points last night. Winnipeg and Montreal are now tied third and fourth because Ottawa beat the Jets. So the Jets are absolutely cratering. I think the big story last night is that Nick Foligno's out.
Mm-hmm.
Like he got hurt in the second period, did not come back for the third. They're calling it an upper body injury. He jammed on the brakes as Jake Allen made a save right in front of the Habs goaltender and looked to be limping. So is it a lower body injury that they're calling an upper body injury because we're that close to the playoffs? Is something else going on? I don't really care what it is as long as he's able to get back and be healthy, but it didn't look good at the time.
I didn't like the walk-off, and I know I talked about the Hyman one in Vancouver, and I said, you know what? I don't think it's season-ending. He'll be back in a couple weeks. The Foligno one, that didn't look good to me. And if they're saying it's not lower body, then I'm going to go with low back, which 90% of players have issues with their back and low back, and guys put hot packs on before they go on the ice every time. The Foligno one didn't look good. And that's the thing. It wasn't a big hit. I'm curious if something happened earlier in the game because he kind of just stopped in front of the Habs, in front of the net, right? And I didn't see much happen. Like, wasn't a big collision. Didn't run in. Didn't fall over. There was nothing. I didn't see anything. I don't know if you guys caught anything. But, yeah, that's not good. I feel like it's been a situation now where when I'm watching these games, when we knew that Toronto was going to lock up first, every single time they would play, I feel like that's what my attention would be towards. Do you remember the games against the Jets? I feel like that was around the time. Okay, if they can lock up these two games against the Jets, they pretty much have first set. And once those games start to happen, then they came, played the Habs the next game, and then the couple against the Canucks. That's when I was kind of, every time a guy would go for a battle or 50-50 puck or go into the boards or go to the front of the net or might take a hit, it was always like, just don't get hurt. And I know you've talked about this.
I tweeted it before last night's game, so I'm feeling guilty.
Okay, so it's your fault then. We're going to blame you.
Yeah, we got to blame somebody, right? There's jinxes out there. That's a whole other thing. We can talk about dressing up to go to movies. We can also talk about whether jinxes really exist.
Yeah, so then I'm putting this one on you because Foligno's hurt because you tweeted it. Yes, I'm going to go with that storyline. But no, that's kind of, and it's not just watching them. It was when I was playing too. When you're in a... That's when guys get hurt. Guys get hurt when they're nothing games, either at the end of the game, end of the year, either you've made it, you haven't made the playoffs. When you're up by a lot in a game in the third period, a lot of these freak injuries happen in those times because guys let their guard down. And it's not that other teams or other players are dirty or it's just the situation you find yourself in when you're not engaged. Like that's how easy it is to get hurt. I'm not saying that happened with Foligno, but that's one way. The Foligno injury, I couldn't tell exactly where he got hurt. I'm more concerned the way he was walking off if they said it was an upper body versus a lower body, because I think it's like an abdominal, low back. I don't think that was a shoulder because he was limping off the ice.
Yep.
So that just means...
And it was non-contact, Ziggy. He jammed on the brakes driving the net. After Jake Allen made a save, right? So
yeah, and that's not good. Like, you have him out of the lineup now. I'm sorry, but that's a big piece. The Leafs gave up a lot for him. I was expecting big things. I don't know where you have Hyman out. You have Foligno kind of, you know, tied things over till Hyman was back. But at this point with Foligno out, it's a big loss for the Leafs.
I was thinking about it. You know, we've been comparing Freddie Anderson's situation to Curtis Joseph's back in the spring of 2002. Joseph had come back from the 2002 Olympics, broke his hand in the first game back with the Leafs, and then returned and played one regular season game before the playoffs. totally different situations and I think totally different expectations about what they could do for the team given where they are in their respective careers. But this is like 20 years ago when the Leafs got Dougie Gilmore back a second time and he blew out an ACL. I think in the second period of his first game, the Leafs were in Calgary. Like Dougie Gilmore didn't even get his homecoming, didn't even get to play in Toronto for the Leafs again. And everybody was so excited about it. It's a different comparison and hopefully it's different in that Nick Foligno will be back, but we may not know a lot here, Ziggy, for a few days, because I think they're going to keep this as under wraps as possible, number one. And number two, if Nick Foligno's not anywhere close to 100%, there's no reason for him to play in any of the remaining four games. There just isn't.
Yeah, you don't play. Yeah, and, you're not going to play him.
And I think you take it a step further and say, with a guy like Foligno, if that extra week before the playoffs helps, then it's a bit of a blessing that the schedule, due to the Vancouver COVID situation, has been pushed back. The end of the regular season originally is scheduled to be this Saturday night. But the Leafs have the two games against the Habs, and then they got the two makeup games that were rejigged for the Canucks situation against Ottawa and Winnipeg next week. So if those extra 7, 8, 9 days off his feet help Nick Foligno be ready for game one of the playoffs, perhaps that's a blessing. You know me, I got to pat myself on the back for the predictions I make on this show, but only when they come true. We uno, Austin scores 2 to get to 40 tonight.
I said it.
Be bold.
I said it was going to be tough to get there, even playing the rest of the way out. It's still not a slam dunk. I still think getting 2 goals, I still think it's going to be tough.
I think he scores 30. I think he scores his 39th tonight. I'll give him 1 goal tonight. Not his 40th, but his 39th. So ding, ding, ding.
You got it right.
And here's the take of the morning. If Philip Deneau's game-tying goal goes in a playoff game, at that time of a playoff game, to tie a playoff game to send us to overtime, we are freaking out at the goaltender. Telling you right now.
Yeah.
That's got to be stopped. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because they're going to win the division, Ziggy. They got 1 point instead of 2. I understand. Like, they're in great shape. Jack Campbell's been very, very good for this team. All of that is real. But that's the sort of goal that cannot go in crunch time in a playoff game. It can't.
I thought he was good for most of the night. That's the thing.
Two-on-one stop.
Power play. He made a couple cross crease. He was moving well. He was reading plays the right way. He was good in front of the net. Didn't give up a lot of rebounds. I don't like those either. I don't mind goals going in where you're either fighting through traffic to see a puck. If it's a good, the first goal the Habs scored, I thought was an awesome goal. Suzuki to Toffoli. I don't think there's much he could do there. But in and around the side of the net, these, and I understand it's an awkward play. It goes from high to low. And as a goaltender, you don't really expect the guy to jam that. He was probably more surprised than anybody else.
All right, because his foot was off the post. That was the issue.
Yeah, well, you're just you're expecting the guy, like, when I'm at the side of the net like that, I'm not even going to think to jam that in. So Deneau, like, you kind of wait. You just see what the goaltender is going to do. It was good patience. That's what I think when I watch a play like that. Good patience. But, yeah, come the playoff time, if a goal like that goes in, I don't know. Like, that's not good. Tying the game up, OT goal. Like, I don't like those side of the net. And I feel like Freddie Anderson would let that odd goal go in the past, right? That we talk about.
The killer in the third period of a deciding playoff game type thing.
Yeah, where you're tied. And the next goal is the biggest play of the game, right? We always talk about goaltenders and making the right saves at the right time. Well, obviously, with a minute to go, you need to stop everything. But Anderson in the past has had an issue with that, right? Where it's that one goal that shouldn't go in. And that's what the focus is. If Campbell starts in the playoffs, you're telling me that's not the focus. Don't let in the odd goal that shouldn't go in. And it's not making a big stop. It's that tying goal, that one from the side where I thought the Leafs did a good job. I thought defensively, if that's what you're going to give up, a player at the side of the net trying to jam a puck in, yeah. Like if I'm Keefe, I'm giving them that chance. Like that's the one I'm giving to my goaltender. And those are the ones when you're a player you don't like, is when you play a situation perfect, you put a team where you want them, and they find a way to score because your goaltender is not in the right position. He's not up against the post. He doesn't see a puck bounce off the backboards, right? It's when the team doesn't do anything special to score. And those are the ones that they're killers, and especially in the playoffs.
And then the 2-on-0 in overtime where Matthews, you'll never see that again, Zig. You'll never see that again.
Yeah.
You'll never see him muff it. And whatever. I mean, I'm not losing. I'm just kind of having a laugh about it. It is what it is, and have score late to win. And those are 2 points that they needed because they're trying to chase down the third seed. Man, I don't know. Pick your poison if you're Montreal. Leafs in the first round, Oilers in the first round.
There's no easy way. Everyone talks about how the North is the easiest division, weakest, whatever you want to call it. It is not going to be easy out of this division. I don't care what you say. I think Winnipeg's a good team too.
Well, the Leafs are careening toward Connor Hellebuyck in the first round. If that guy wakes up, I can already sense it, Ziggy. The playoff panic is starting in our conversation. Well, if Connor Hellebuyck wakes up, oh my God, if they get Carey Price back, well, Jake Allen's definitely a good 1B, could start a playoff round for you. But if Carey Price comes back and he's feeling good, and what if Josh Anderson or somebody gets on a heater? Like it's, we're starting to worry.
Yeah. I'm concerned when you have a guy like Hellebuyck in net. I'm concerned. Mike Smith at Edmonton, he's had stretches this year where he can win a series with just some decent offensive production. The thing for the Canadians with me is I don't know if it's the fact that Gallagher's not playing. I don't know if just they've had the COVID situation hit them, coaching change. They've gone through a lot this year, and I still think they're going to be a tough out. Do you not see the way the Canadians play the first five? Like when they come out, I know they lost the last one, but even in this one, the first 5-10 minutes of the game, they come out and they're physical more than any other team in this division. And that's a recipe. If you want to beat the Leafs, you have to be physical. Everyone knows that. Everyone in the North knows that. Everyone in the league knows that. And the Canadians can do it better than anyone else. I know Winnipeg has the great, awesome first, you know, their top two lines can do damage physically and they can put the puck in the net. But the Canadians, I'm telling you, are more built for the playoffs than they are for the regular season. You mix that in with Carey Price, if he's healthy, and we see what he did last year in the bubble, then you're going to be, I'm concerned. If you're the Leafs, you have to be worried about that. But what the issue with the Canadians these last 10, 12 games, I mean, they've had problems most of the season, is they can't score. Like, who's going to score? Toffoli? Who else do you have? Like, Caulfield? Like, Cole Caulfield, he scored 2 in OT. It's 3-on-3. This time of the year, I'm sorry, but no one, even the Leafs, I know they lost it in OT, but they don't care about overtime.
Right, and Brendan Gallagher's return is negotiable and all that stuff as he's dealing with the thumb injury. Right. I mean, that's what the Habs are going to do. They're going to try and lock it down. There's not going to be a lot of space out there, and they're going to try and play a one-goal, low-scoring game. There's no doubt about it. But you look at it, and the Leafs won't get the Oilers in the first round because they're going to finish 1-2. But whether it's Mike Smith, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, or whether it's the possibility of Carey Price and the big Montreal Canadiens or facing Connor Hellebuyck, there's a reason to worry about any of the opponents. I still think that the Leafs are getting through the first round for sure, and then they're going to probably take on the Oilers the way that things seem to be trending. I know trends can change quickly come playoff time, I still think they should get through the North Division. Certainly the first round.
I really do. It's going to come down. I have no problem with the first round. It's the second round and what the other series does. Does it go long or is it over in 4 or 5 games? That's going to dictate a lot with what happens after the first
round. Yeah, what's your opponent's rest compared to yours and all of that. Gord Stella coming up on the other side. So we'll get back into last night's game and we'll talk about the Foligno injury for sure. I think that's the lead story. I don't think we're freaking out about Deneau's goal because of where we are in the season, but Jack Campbell can't allow that goal in an exact same situation in a playoff game. When you're up a goal with less than a minute left in the third period, that cannot get past your goaltender for the game-tying marker to send a playoff game into overtime. And we haven't touched yet on the situation at Madison Square Garden, Capitals-Rangers, where Tom Wilson did Tom Wilson things. We'll bring Gord into that conversation. He will be along for the panel at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. The Blue Jays fall in Oakland, and it's an absolute must win. If there's any chance, and really there isn't one, but if there's any chance, it's a must win for the Raptors against the Clippers tonight. Chamomile tea or something you're drinking or what?
I go green tea in the morning.
It kind of looks like whiskey from here.
Oh, well, it's definitely not whiskey.
It's definitely okay.
It may sound like whiskey.
I haven't gotten started just yet.
Green tea, jasmine green tea, or I do gunpowder green tea. Yes, it's quite me and my taste.
I wonder if Gord Stellick drinks gunpowder green tea with his breakfast every morning.
I think Gord goes straight coffee in the morning for sure.
Yeah.
Straight coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. Here he is, the co-host of Leafs Nation pre and post on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You a green tea guy? You a coffee guy?
Whiskey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Doesn't matter the time of day.
Yeah. No, I am a coffee guy and, I always enjoy in all seriousness, the unique people you meet very early in the morning when you pick up your coffee at a local establishment.
Yes, yes. Coffee is key. Coffee is key. All right. I'd be nitpicky on the second one, so I'll go with what I think we agree is the lead story here, and this is whatever it is that is going on with Nick Foligno. So he drives the net off the rush, kind of a wrister. Jake Allen catches it, play stops. Foligno jams on the brakes right in front of the goaltender. It's a non-contact play, and he's kind of hunched over and limping off the ice. The Leafs are calling it an upper body injury. The way he reacted suggests it would be a lower body injury. I don't know whether upper or lower matters, Gord. It's just, is he okay? This is worrying.
Yeah, and, did it happen, say, 20 seconds before, as we try to analyze how he went to the net, was actually the play about 20 seconds, 30 seconds before, upper body-wise, and then he hung in there, and just is hunched over and overcome with whatever. I don't know. But this is on a night where if Jenny Malkin came back, Tyler Seguin, even though Dallas doesn't look like they're going to make the playoffs. But, that's the positive you want to get this time of the season. And you're right, this is the one X factor about any particular team is injuries at this point. So the one big disconcerting point you take out of it is the health of Nick Foligno, and let's hope it's nothing serious. I take it we'll find out a little bit more today.
At this point, when you have an injury to Foligno, you had Hyman go down, do you not think if you're Keith and Dubas right now to see if you can rest more players? I know they did it the other night. Do you think that's You think that's going to happen? I know we're not sure because of salary cap, right? It's not as easy as everyone says, oh, you just rest guys. But with the salary cap, it's very difficult in most organizations. But with the Leafs, I think they have some flexibility where they can sit some players out. Is that something you see them doing?
You know, we discussed it last time, Ziggy, and that, and you know, I would look at it more that because if anyone is banged up, that's a key word, you get a chance to do that. Veteran players, if you have back-to-backs and you want to give them off, I think you can roll four lines more. I think you can inject new players into the lineup a little bit more, which is something Sheldon Keefe is doing. But I would play those young guys all the time, maybe just a few less minutes because you're rolling the four lines. This is a team that's going to could have a week off after their season. Like you talk about, you know, practice time is at a premium. Now it's an exhausting schedule, but because of the Vancouver situation, the Canadian division may start the playoffs later. So you're talking about those horrible games when guys take a week off to go to Florida. Now, at least they'll be practicing. So, I mean, you got a conundrum that way. So it's not like they're going to be fatigued hitting in the playoffs, and you never truly can avoid injuries. I know you can try to, you know, cut. You think that diminish the odds if you rest guys, but really, I wouldn't overthink it. I would just do some of those other measures.
You think the league will start the playoffs before the regular season ends? I know it's been talked about, right? Because I believe Vancouver plays on the Wednesday, is it not? The 19th, and the league should start the playoffs then. Do you see something like that happening where they start the play? Like if Vancouver and Calgary are out, the league starts the North Division while the regular season is still playing. Is that a smart move?
you know, you're right. No, it sounds absurd, because otherwise it's absurd that these two teams are going to play meaningless games, yeah, and the other teams are going to wait around to start the playoffs. But in a lot of ways, if you're starting the playoffs, are you diminishing the integrity of those regular season mm-hmm. games? I just wish Vancouver could phone, their owner could phone Gary Bettman and just say one word, uncle. And he would go, yeah, you know what? You know, it's not about revenues of the players. We talked about the incredible burden they're having of the load right now. And why don't you just end it, go by winning percentage, because it's not going to change things. Although, if Winnipeg, Montreal, they wouldn't factor in. If they do all 56 games, then you would have a pure season as far as that goes, jockeying for playoff positions. But, Ziggy, I'm giving like the worst-case scenario. That's not fun if they're going to have to wait it out. Again, it's not been determined, but that's not a good scenario for whoever's playing in the Canadian division.
Well, the last time the Vancouver Canucks play a playoff-bound team, it'll be the Oilers on Saturday, May 15th. The Leafs play Winnipeg the night before in the rejig schedule, if I'm not mistaken. So the 15th would be the Oilers' last game, and then they've got three games Vancouver does against the Flames after that. And really, it's who cares. Like, Vancouver's at 46 games played, which means they max out at 20 points gained if they go 10-0, which would get them to 61. Well, Winnipeg and Montreal have 57 points each right now, tied for third. So they're 3-4. Like, this ain't happening. So I think the league could start right now to figure out whatever the schedule is going to be, because it's Toronto, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Montreal in whatever order for the playoffs. We know who the four playoff teams are. The math has not formally confirmed it from a Winnipeg-Montreal perspective, but it's going to happen. So, I mean, I'd get on it now. I trust that the league is.
Yeah, and you know, Scott, common sense really has prevailed by and large in making decisions throughout the COVID era, difficult decisions and you know, well thought out decisions. And so about a week ago, when Calgary looked like they still had a pretty decent chance before this past weekend, I mean, that was the scenario. That was the understanding. You're going to have some time off if you're one of the other Canadian teams to let that series finish out. But I hope and I trust, even though it'll be weird if you're Calgary, Vancouver, why are you playing three games? Talk about injury.
Nights
to get hurt in one of those three, right?
Three games in four nights. I think it's Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday or something like that the following week.
Yeah. But
what are you going to do? Here's my take. It has gone ignored for a few reasons, not the least of which it's clear now the Leafs are going to win the division, and they still came away with a point last night. But if last night, Gord, was a playoff game that the Leafs were leading by a goal with less than a minute to go in the third period, the Toronto Maple Leafs goaltender cannot allow a goal like the one Philip Deneau scored?
Yeah, there's the glass half full, the glass half empty. I concur on the half empty part. On the half full part, I thought Jack Campbell's played well the last couple of games. But to your point, Scott, that's exactly what's happened in the playoffs. Just that goal that you shouldn't allow. Like, the weirdest goal Freddie Anderson ever allowed was the last game seven against Boston, you know, the impossible angle goal. So, you know, so to your point, I would agree. You would hope. Who would expect a 2-on-0? Like, Matthews, Marner, no, you take it. A 2-on-0 in overtime, they don't score. When Austin Matthews, anytime he touches the puck or a tenth of the puck, he seems to put it in. But I would agree with you there. Again, these games I don't worry about. I think the Leafs made a good statement after going to Vancouver, which they needed to make before heading into the playoffs. And I like the trajectory where they are right now heading into the playoffs overall when you look at things in the big picture.
Something that stuck out to me yesterday was 4.5 minutes of power play time for Sandin and 1.5 minutes for Riley. So Sandin takes his spot on the power play. How did you think he did at the top there? And do you see him kind of, I know that we're going to talk a lot about it leading up to the playoffs. Is he going to be one of the top six on the back end for the Leafs?
Well, I think by default, because of Bogosian probably being out to start, he will. Even after that, it'd be kind of interesting. I mean, that's been a very encouraging part to see how Rasmus Sandin has played. I love coming on with you guys, and it's been a lot of time that I keep saying I'm not worried about the power play. It'll work itself out, and now here we are getting close to the end of the regular season, and it's a little bit better than how bad it was a couple of weeks ago. So it's all about options. Like, I think it's all about options for Sheldon Keefe, whether it's third, fourth line, you know, different pair, different skill sets, different players, different ways you can use them. And that includes the power play. So I think it's been encouraging what Sandin's done. He hasn't been a difference maker that way, but obviously is something Sheldon Keefe is trying to figure out what exactly is the best mix right now. And especially in the playoffs.
Both are impressive. So answering one over the other does not diminish the other's accomplishment. But Austin scores number 39 last night, so he is well on his way at some point here between now and the end of the regular season to scoring 40. And he would max out at 52 games scored. So it's 40 in 52. Connor McDavid, 2 goals, 2 assists, 4 more points last night in the Oilers win. He's got 91 points in 50 games. Does the point total or Austin's goal scoring run impress you more?
I'll take Austin Matthews for 100, Scott. That is it. That is, and again, I'm glad you said, because you're not diminishing anyone else's accomplishment. I mean, Connor McDavid right now is just on a different planet. He is a lot like Wayne Gretzky was decades ago when he would get 200 plus points. And the second leading guy would get like 130. That's a big thing people forget. It's not like the second leading scorer was like 5 points behind Wayne Gretzky. I just think, given about the pressures about getting to the next level, the Toronto Maple Leafs and Austin Matthews bringing his game after battling Pasternak and Ovi for the Rocket Richard last year, then making a statement this year that, you know what, this trophy's mine. I'm the best goal scorer, and you know, and I give a little bit more cachet to goals versus assists. So to me, in these two incredible accomplishments, potential accomplishments in this schedule shortened year, I would go with Austin Matthews.
Leafs and Habs again on Thursday night, so we'll call you up Friday morning and bug you then, pal. Always good to hear your voice.
Sounds good. Have a good one, guys.
You bet. Gord Stellick alongside Nick Alberga, the co-host of Leafs Nation Pre and Post here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Kevin Barker for the full half hour on the Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. That's at 7:30. Michael Tracos covers the Maple Leafs and is a national NHL writer for Post Media. He'll be along at 7:15. By the way, he's also the author of a book. It's called Of the Next Ones, How McDavid, Matthews, and a Group of Young Guns took over the NHL, and that feeds right into our conversation that we've been having about Austin and Connor and just how impressive they have been. And Tom Wilson was back at it last night, this time at Madison Square Garden. We'll break down what happened and how should the NHL react next. Brad in Alliston, Texas to 590-590. Dermot needs to go to Robidoux Island so Sandine can play. 416 number with a really just a very good question. What the hell is the point of having Vancouver finish their season? Sure, there's a logical answer to that, but it's not one that interests you or me.
We'd like to broadcast the games, yes. And I'm sure fans in Calgary and Vancouver would like to watch their teams play, even if they're not in the playoffs. I mean, I'd be watching Leaf games if they weren't in the playoffs.
I can tell you right now.
Is that a big no for you?
Based on the experience that I remember from the half season of Peter Horacek and that group, I didn't need to see that team play one more game than it did. I didn't need to see an 83rd experience of that whole train wreck.
I watch them all, so.
I'm in.
But yeah, I mean, I think the league will start. I don't think they're going to hold off the playoffs so that two non-playoff teams can finish their season.
If Calgary was still in the race to catch Montreal or Winnipeg, you'd have to wait. But I think by that point, that won't be the case. I could be wrong. Winnipeg could lose another 4 in a row, make it 10 in a row, and then suddenly something's interesting. Mm-hmm. But even then, Calgary's got to go on a run here. There's two sides to the coin. Winnipeg's got to keep losing, or Montreal needs to start losing again, one of the two. And Calgary needs to take advantage by winning some hockey games. So yeah. I just don't think it's likely.
I think teams are sick of playing the same 6-7 teams. I really do. That's kind of what I've been hearing, the rumblings.
The rumblings around the league?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't blame them. Same division, division. It's hard. It's like the same. I don't think we've gotten the rivalries out of it that we thought we would have. Remember when we started? We're like, oh, it's going to be just a killer game in the third. I think it's been. I haven't seen it.
Well, I think part of it, I mean, the Leafs are in the playoffs, right? And have the only question at different times has been whether the Leafs would fall out of first place. And the answer to that question has been no throughout. They've come close a couple of times. They've fallen a point back of the Oilers, but there's been no drama around that. I think a big part of this, Ziggy, is that it's very clear who the four playoff teams are and who the three non-playoff teams are. There's no drama for the final playoff spot or two.
I just meant in general over the course of the season, and I don't know if it's the fact that they're playing so many games in such a short amount of time where it's they're saying to themselves, we can't get into a battle after the whistle. We can't get in a fighting match here. We need the 2 points. If it's not going to happen, we got to get ready for the next game. I don't know if it's a little bit of that or it's just the fact that it's the same team over and over again, and guys are just tired of it, and they don't even want to get into a scrap with a team outside of the 2 points. So it's one of those two situations where we haven't seen that. Remember, we were talking about these rivalries are just going to explode this year. Maybe I missed something. There's times the season when Calgary would kind of get into it with, you know,
Vancouver, the Leafs, even
a little, not much.
Right.
We saw a little bit of it, but not
the Kachuk
Campbell
thing and Muzzin flipping the puck. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, from an Eastern Canadian perspective, the Leafs and Habs will always be a thing. And then the Senators just aren't there yet, right? The Battle of Ontario has gone dry in the last 16 years because when the Leafs have been good, the Sens haven't. When the Sens have been good, the Leafs haven't, so they never really play each other on even footing.
It hasn't been just the North. It's been all of the divisions. I haven't seen any rivalry pick up in any of the other three either.
Nick Foligno, we need him to be okay on the game-tying goal. Jack Campbell needed to make that save. And Tom Wilson back at it. Hugh jumps in for a panel discussion, and then Michael Trakos joins us.
Lead off with Ziggy and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
What was the quota for Star Wars drops, Hugh?
Well, in my script, I have 4 slots I can put audio in. So I used 4.
You used Star 4
Wars drops.
Over under 3.5.
I would have used more. May the 4th be with you.
And may the 4th be with you, yes. Ziggy. And
I heard you guys talking earlier. So what was the consensus? Dress up for Star Wars when we go see it in theater or not?
Well, are we ever going to go back to theaters?
No.
Are we ever going to let people's droplets land on us ever again?
That's the best part of going to a theater.
The droplets. Yes. I don't think I could.
No?
I don't think I could dress up. I could
dress up as like Chewbacca.
Well, that's what Ziggy said. Ziggy picked the 2 Darth Vader
Darth Vader.
Where your face wouldn't be seen, right? I mean, you'd be...
I want to dress up as Princess Leia. Strap a couple of bagels, cinnamon rolls, the side of your head. Way you go.
Chewbacca, that's Hugh snoring at night.
Yep.
Play it one more time, Silent Vic there. Is that?
Oh, 5 feet. That's why 5 feet of fury is so badly underslept.
Yeah, that's right.
Just
she's
listening,
always tired.
Listening to that all night.
Yeah.
Hugh, turn over on your side.
That's an adorable sound, isn't it?
Here's a good segue. Starting tomorrow, we're giving away $150 Lone Star e-gift cards to celebrate Cinco de Mayo and the amazing deals Lone Star has this entire week. Tune in tomorrow to find out how you can win.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Leafs lose to the Habs in overtime last night. There's a couple of topics that we've been delving into, the Foligno injury and my stated case that come playoff time, Jack Campbell needs to stop Philip Deneau type goal.
Yeah.
Final minute of the game, you got a 1-goal lead. That can't go in. You pull your foot off the post, understand. We'll get back into the Leafs. We'll get into the Blue Jays here in just a little bit. Kevin Barker for the half an hour at 7:30. Tom Wilson was back in action doing Tom Wilson things last night, and this time it was at Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm.
So
I have audio. Can I just play the audio here? Let me find it here. Just it like before we actually break it down. This is what happened last night.
Is this going to give us like a little theater of the mind?
It's a little bit of theater of their mind. Yeah, here we go. Let's see. Yeah, here we go.
How's this going for you, Hugh?
Here we go.
Can locate this thing?
Are we ready?
Fire it up.
So this is last night during a line brawl.
Oh, boy. Now Wilson. This is ridiculous. Panarin. What is Wilson doing?
Which is the salient question here. What is Wilson doing?
Well, yeah, but... The stuff with Panarin happened after Pavel Buchnevich's face down on the ice. And I heard your descriptor aptly put that he was punching Buchnevich in the back of the head.
Yeah.
He also had his stick in cross check. He's leaning over Buchnevich and he's got his stick pressed down on the back of Buchnevich's neck as Buchnevich's face is buried in the ice.
Yeah.
And he's kind of given him a couple of...
Little love taps.
Well, love taps.
I didn't like the head hit on the ground. He was on the ground, and he swung at him to put his head into the ground. I didn't like that one. You want to knock a guy down, you want to be rough after the whistle, I'm all down for it. Buchnevich, I don't know that that was... the guy to go after. So,
but the Rangers don't have anybody though. Like that's the thing. Like who's the grit on the Rangers? There ain't nobody.
Okay.
And then Panarin comes in.
Panarin jumped on
his
back though. I'm not faulting Tom Wilson for the Panarin stuff. They were wrestling. Panarin fell awkwardly to the ice and ended up getting hurt. Panarin jumped on his back.
I don't know. I think that was the Panarin one was worse for me than the first and what was worse than what happened in front of the net. I think with Panarin, you when you're Tom Wilson, you know a guy like that, he's not just some muscle that's there to knock heads. This guy can play hockey.
Yeah.
He can score. He can see the ice. He knows when he gets into it with someone, he knows who he's up against. He knew that was Panarin. It wasn't like it was some melee where it's a line brawl where you don't really know who you're matched up. He knew Panarin was there, and Panarin is really lucky the way he fell towards the ice, because there was no whiplash with his head. Usually a guy will fall like that back or on his side, and the kind of body hits, and then the head hits after. He's lucky because he kind of all went at the same time, yeah. And he definitely got a concussion out of it. Like, I'm telling you, he smacked his head off the ground. It could have been really bad.
Well, he's done for the year, and they only have 3 games left, but he's done for the year.
I think it's more a shoulder. I didn't actually see him bang his head off the ice. I think he landed on his shoulder really awkwardly.
I saw a slow-mo replay of it this morning, and it didn't look good. So, like I said, it could have been a lot worse. Those whiplash, you know, when a guy gets in a fight and he falls, guys fall together, they usually hit the side of their body, their shoulder, and then the head off the ice. He's lucky because he kind of fell all as one, and it could have been a lot worse. But when you're Tom Wilson, I don't like that. Like, at that point, why? That's for me.
That's my question. Yeah. Why? Is that tough? Is that tough hockey?
Something must, I'll tell you right now, him in the box after, did you see the whole
hulking
display?
Up thing? Yeah.
Yeah, like.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Something happened during that game where they were all over him. I don't know what could be said. The Rangers are out of it, right? Like,
well, that loss eliminated them last night, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're 9 points back with 3, like, whatever, 7 points back. Like, could they have even caught them if they would have won that? That would have got them to 60 points with Islanders win. So, yeah, I mean, last night was a big night, but they weren't going to catch up. I just don't understand what the big deal was in that game where that needed to happen. I know we were talking about rivalries and whatnot, but at this point of the year, it's too late for the rivalries to start. Unless you're in a fight for the playoffs or you're sending a message you're going to meet like the Leafs Habs, fine. But a team not in the playoffs, I don't get it. Every single guy in the league wants Tom Wilson on their team. You can say whatever you want. That was a dirty hit on Panarin.
Oh, yeah. And I promised, and Silent Vic and Hayden can confirm this, I'm taking a shot of alcohol at home later today every time I hear somebody say, I'd take Tom Wilson on my team. Because of course, but it's the default setting for all of this crap in hockey. Well, I'd take him on my team. Take him on my team. Okay, great.
I wish I said
about the issue. This guy, garbage. It's garbage from a guy who is a repeat offender and has a laundry list of crap in his background. Does this league have the guts to deal with him properly?
No, he might get a game or two.
Pavel Buchnevich.
Yeah, he might get a game or two.
Artemi Panarin. This isn't exactly Hulk Hogan versus Zeus.
Well, tomorrow night's game finishes off the season series between these two teams. And with the Rangers out of it, you wonder what's going to happen if Tom Wilson is in the lineup. Probably won't be. He might. I don't know. Does he have a meeting today? Like, do we know that, or is it? He got a 10-minute misconduct. Got booted out. But this is what he does. This is the type of player I'm not even surprised by this anymore. It's what he does. And until someone stops him from doing it, he's going to continue to do it.
And the someone runs the NHL player safety department.
They haven't stopped him yet.
The notion that the New York Rangers don't have a tough guy who can stand up to Tom Wilson. Okay, well, are we taking this back to the 70s and the 80s then? Well, you gotta sign a Scott Sabourin type who's going to play two shifts.
Maybe if you're playing the Washington Capitals in the playoffs, maybe you should have somebody.
Or maybe if he behaves like that, he should get a 3 or 4 game suspension like he did time
in
the playoffs.
They're not going to suspend him in the playoffs.
Everybody's talking about, I don't know. I you're not going to suspend him for the rest of the year in the playoffs. It's not happening. Come back next year. I'm seeing a lot of that thrown around. He might get a game or two, but it's not happening.
No, but what I'm saying is if that act, and I would think he would exercise some self-control, but if that act returns in the playoffs, he needs to be punished in the playoffs. Right? I mean, this guy has a playoff suspension in his history. Zach Aston-Reese, right? Got concussed, broke his jaw on a Tom Wilson hit in the playoffs. I think Wilson got 3 games. That was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Wilson was suspended 2 months ago for 7 games for that boarding of Brandon Carlo of the Bruins.
He played. he'll say that he plays on the edge because he has to stay in the league, because that's the type of game he plays. That's when he's most effective. Are you telling me that if you're going into the corner as a defenseman, you don't hear those footsteps behind you and take your eye off the puck and look around a little bit?
But that's a different conversation. Yeah. There have been power forwards through the decades who will run you through the end boards and do it cleanly. Cam Neely was impossible to play against. He was awesome back
Lindros,
in the day.
Yeah.
Eric Lindros was awesome back in the day. You don't see a suspension sheet longer than your leg.
No.
You know? I want a Gary Roberts type on my team who's gonna hit you hard and compete for the puck. That's a totally separate conversation. Tom Wilson is well within his rights to play that way and is more than capable to play that way, has the size to play that way, has the skill to play that way. Doesn't need to be ragdolling Artemi Panarin and cross-checking Pavel Buchnevich's face into the ice after a whistle.
But would you, and I don't want to go back to the caveman days either. I think the game has evolved past that. But would you not agree that perhaps if the Rangers had somebody of the same kind of type of player that Tom Wilson is, do you think he does that to Panarin?
Who's that type of somebody? Is that somebody? Is that
Rangers,
somebody?
No, they don't have.
Is that somebody ever on the ice when Tom Wilson's on the ice, or he gets thrown out on the ice after the fact?
Maybe he gets thrown out on the ice after the fact. I mean, in the old days, I remember back when I was young, there was a price to be paid, right? So now you're putting that punishment in someone else's hands, and you better have a lot of faith that the NHL is actually going to punish
him.
And they're not going to.
And the price to be paid is that the guy, the enforcer type, gets out there, drops the gloves with a guy, and takes a 2-minute penalty for instigating.
Yeah.
Punish the retaliation.
But maybe he thinks twice before getting punched in the face.
I want Buchnevich in front of the net just to get up and just smack Wilson just once. Just get up. I was just like watching that over him. Just get up and
I'm gonna sound like a Neanderthal, but an eye for an eye. Cross check him in the teeth. You know, let him serve his two or three game suspension. Getting some dental work done.
Well, if you're the Rangers, you don't have anybody to match Tom Wilson.
No one close.
Right.
Nope. There's nobody there. And that's going to go back to the whole thing. Go and get someone.
Maybe you take a run at Ovechkin.
The hard part about Tom Wilson is he's tough and he can play.
Yeah.
And there's not many guys that can do those.
Well, that's it. See, that's the infuriating thing if you're the other team.
Yeah,
he's not just some person who plays 4 minutes a game. He's a really good hockey player.
Oh, yes,
man.
He is. But that's not – we can't default to that to say that everything that he does is acceptable. Well, he's a really good player, so it's okay.
It's not okay, but until somebody on another team makes it not okay, he's completely fine with it.
And if he was just a dumb enforcer who played 4 minutes a night, it would be easy to give him a 10-game suspension and be done with him.
Yep.
But because he can, quote, play, it's a huge blow to the Washington Capitals if he's lost for any amount of time.
That's right.
So how about a huge blow to the Washington Capitals? Maybe that would act as a deterrent.
He might get a couple of games. They won't touch him in the playoffs.
All right. Michael Trakos is here from Post Media, who's been listening to all of this and wondering when he's going to get to chime in. You got a thought on this Tom Wilson situation, Michael? And feel free to tell me I'm right. I'm always open to those suggestions.
Yeah, it's a tough one, Scotty. I'm listening to you guys. And, you know, I see both sides of this. I see Tom Wilson as, you know, sort of Eric Lindros 2.0, obviously not quite as skilled, not even close to being as skilled, but being that guy that's a first-line guy who, you know, disrupts plays and, you know, makes it really uncomfortable for the other team. Like, I was even trying to picture the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he does this to Mitch Marner and say, you know, Matthew steps in, and then he treats Matthew like he treated Panarin. Who on the Leafs is going to respond? And you'd like to say, okay, Wayne Simmonds, but even Wayne Simmonds is not even a fair match for Tom Wilson. No offense to Simmonds, but aside from like a guy like Ryan Reeves, there's very few guys that can handle what Tom Wilson brings in terms of that physicality. So, you know, this is where you hope the league can step in, because, you know, when you've got a guy who's just such a raw dog like Wilson, how many guys can match him? especially guys who are on the top two lines, like you said, they're going to be playing against them on a nightly basis. So, yeah, this is one where the league has to step in, and I'd be surprised if, you know, he doesn't get the rest of the regular season, but it doesn't stretch into the playoffs as well. If he's playing a game in the first round, there's going to be a lot of people upset, and probably including me, just with the rap sheet that he's got.
Yeah, and the league's kind of gotten away from this, right? Like, we don't see – we've seen that weed out of the fighting is down, all the stuff after the whistle, and we expected that to kind of pick up this year. At least I did. I mean, we talk about it on the show. You're going to play the same division. There's going to be all these heated rivalries. We're talking this morning how we haven't seen it in the North Division, and I don't think I've seen it much in any of the other divisions. I don't watch it as much, but is that something that surprised you, how we didn't see these – the Philly-Pittsburgh rivalry just intense, or Leafs-Habs, or Flames-Oilers. Like, none of that really materialized this year.
No. You know, aside from, like, the last week and a half now, we haven't seen any of it. And now we're starting to see it because I think, you know, you're talking about teams now playing, Toronto's playing Montreal for the final three times of the season. So now you're setting that tone. Now you're trying to send a message for a potential playoff meeting. And you saw the Habs when they played the Oilers last week. They were going hard and harder against Draisaitl and McDavid. The way that Weber was treating Draisaitl wasn't anything like we saw those two guys playing against each other in January or February. So, yeah, the tone has shifted, and you know this better than anyone. Hockey in the first month of the season differs greatly from, you know, those dog days of February to right before the playoffs, and that intensity ramps up. And I think what Wilson was doing last night was, you know, the intensity's ramping up. That was a Capitals team that was shorthanded. They had a couple guys sitting out for disciplinary reasons, for things that they did within their own team structure. So he knew they were shorthanded. Maybe he knew that this is a chance to obviously clinch a playoff berth and or just put the Rangers out of the playoffs. So, yeah, he was going at it with an intensity that we didn't see all regular season. So, yeah, expect more of that now that we've got, you know, fewer than half a dozen games left.
Michael Trakos is with us. He is the national hockey writer for Post Media, and he is the author of The Next Ones, How McDavid, Matthews, and a Group of Young Guns Took Over the NHL. Eric Lindros has written the foreword for the book, and Michael traveled from Helsinki, Finland, to Thunder Bay, talking to upcoming NHL stars, families, teammates, coaches of these players, scouts. Sounds like a really cool experience, and one we'll touch on here in just a moment. But we'll lead into it, Michael, with the question that we've been asking, understanding, of course, that answering for one does not diminish the accomplishment of the other. But what impresses you more? Connor McDavid, who with 2 goals and 4 points in last night's game, now has 91 points in 50 Oilers games as he pushes for 100 in a shortened season. Or Austin Matthews, who is now 1 goal shy of 40 in what for him will be no more than a 52-game season.
They're both ridiculous. Any time when, you know, I was seeing the stats last night that, you know, McDavid's putting up points per game numbers equivalent to Mario Lemieux, and same thing with Matthews. His goals per game is Lemieux-like. You shouldn't be able to touch those numbers because different era, different goalies, different game. So they're both ridiculous. For me, you know, the fact that McDavid is going to put 100 points up in a 56-game season is just, it's ridiculous. So I'm going to say McDavid, just because when I look at those offensive leaders now on the scoring list, and, you know, if Draisaitl was leading the league with 73 points, he'd say, hey, something's wrong here. We're in the final weeks of the season, and we're not even going to get a guy with 82 points, but you look at McDavid's numbers and you're going, yeah, it looks like a regular 82-game season. And, you know, same thing with Matthews, too. You know, if you finish with 40-something goals, that just looks like a regular year. Sometimes you don't get a 50-goal scorer. But what McDavid's doing, 91 points right now, it's ludicrous. The goalies are so good. The defenses, everyone plays a 200-foot game now. Everyone checks. Everyone back checks. So I don't know how this guy is able to score at will. Well, I know how he is because he's not human, obviously.
Yeah, and it's really impressive. It's the single-handed efforts that do it for me. Speed to the neutral zone. He doesn't really need much help around him to get it done for McDavid. And Matthews, to score this many goals, I think you do need someone. So it's tough to say, well, who does McDavid have playing with him and who does Matthews have playing with, you know, can Matthews do this by himself? Can McDavid do it by himself? And I know Josh Anderson was asked yesterday about the difference between them. I was wondering your thoughts on it because he was kind of alluding to, you know, Matthews has Marner on the ice. That's the big difference. Or was there something more there in Josh Anderson's comments like, yeah, Matthews is only good because of Marner, which I don't think is necessarily the case.
No, I was almost reading that as like, when he was mentioning Marner, it was almost like, yeah, as dangerous as Matthews is, he's doubly dangerous because he's got arguably one of the best playmakers riding shotgun with him. And, you know, Marner's shown that he can shoot the puck as well. So I don't think there's a knock on, you know, Matthews only can do this because he's got Marner. I think it was, yeah, Jesus, like, this guy's incredible, plus he's got Marner, whereas, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl aren't always playing together, and mm-hmm. you know, you take Draisaitl off that line, and it's just McDavid. Saying that, it's not, yeah. not just McDavid. Yeah. Like, I was talking with Matt Nichol, former strength coach of the Leafs. You guys know him pretty well, I'm sure. And he was just saying how strong McDavid is, and, you know, the credit we don't give this guy who's, you know, he's not built like Tom Wilson, but he says you spend any time with him in the weight room and just where he is right now as a 24-year-old. You know, Weber's going after guys like McDavid and Draisaitl, and then you see McDavid now. He's throwing hits. I think he's fifth on the team amongst forwards and body checks this year. So we're seeing also just different facets of McDavid's game. Obviously, he's scoring at a higher clip than he's ever done. But I just feel like everything's really coming together right now. Like these next 2 years, like as good as he's been, he's almost treating the league similar to how he treated the OHL in his final years, where it's just kind of like he's now become the man amongst boys, and it's really fascinating to see. I'm kind of curious to see what's going to happen in the playoffs, because that's always been the knock against the Leafs. It's been the knock against McDavid as well. Like, as good as these teams are in the regular season, it's a different story come playoff time, and you know, I think we're just seeing a little bit more grit, a little bit more physicality from both the Oilers and the Leafs, and we'll see if those guys, Matthews and McDavid, can put up the point totals in the playoffs, just with that new, you know, a little bit more size, a little bit more snarl to the game.
Yeah, and if we get a regular season next year of 82 games, Michael, it'd be the first time in 3 years that a full season worth of games has played out. Can Connor score 150 points? Can Austin notch 60 goals? Like, it's, and these, as you said, these guys are getting into their mid-20s now, like right into their primes. We'll leave it there just because we're up against time. Thanks for this. The book is called The Next Ones, How McDavid, Matthews, and a Group of Young Guns Took Over the NHL. You travel a lot to piece this book together. We look forward to reading it, and we'll have you back on to talk about it more. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Thanks, Scotty. Thanks, Lee. Appreciate it.
Michael Trakos, national hockey writer for Post Media. The Jays played late last night, but that doesn't matter to Kevin Barker. He's not only awake, he's here. In studio, Barker for the half hour next.
You're listening to Lead Off with Ziggy and Scotty Mac on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Thursday mornings. We let him play DJ when he comes on with Justin Bourne at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
I think your privileges. Do you know Careless Whisper by Michael?
But I know it.
You're a diehard fan or what?
Yeah. This is Josh Reddick's walk-up song for Oakland. This is the only reason I know this song. I just remember I could picture him walking to the plate in Oakland, and they pop this on. And everybody in the stands starts doing their little. It's awesome.
And Josh Reddick. Like, that's that awesome. That's the most Josh Reddick thing
it
ever.
It is.
Because you know Josh Reddick smokes about a pack a game. And loves his WWE. It's either that or Stone Cold Steve Austin's Breaking Glass music for Josh Reddick coming to play, right?
This could not be any better start to the day. Yes. We should just let that play.
We could just run it underneath this entire conversation.
The entire time. I didn't start it over again.
Every time I hear this, do you guys know that guy that like goes around stores and malls and he plays the Tanner saxophone to this? Sexy Sax Man, I think his name is.
Here in Toronto?
He does it like all over the world. He like wears sunglasses. He brings a Tanner sax with him and he'll like jump in. He'll go into like a Walmart or Target.
See, this feels like it's like a social media thing I've missed out on.
So you gotta check it out. Yeah, Sexy Sax Man.
And it's always hilarious. Careless Whisper.
It's always this. This is the only song he plays.
Love to travel the world.
You gotta look it up.
All right. Kevin Barker. Kevin Barker is here, and he's brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com, and I'm sure Careless Whisper is part of their Muzak.
Yeah, I love it. Did you have to raise your voice to get through that? Because Vic's back there turning that song up.
Right.
That's tremendous.
Talk over George Michael, right?
Yeah, you guys are welcome.
Just get the liner.
Anytime.
All right, where do you want to start? George Springer didn't pinch hit in the ninth inning for one of the Jays' weaker hitters, Danny Jansen. They lose 5-4. We get to Mats and all that, but George Springer isn't. And Shai Davidi asked the question after the game at Charlie Montoyo on the Zoom post game, and Charlie said, look, if he was available, I'd have used him. Shai asked the question, and Charlie, I don't want to say he got defensive, but he was kind of like, hey, Shai. I'm not a complete moron. Like, if George Springer was available, I would have pinch hit.
Yeah, thanks,
for obviously. Danny Jansen.
I mean, that's a
great... Well, he said he was tired.
He said
he was fatigued.
Okay, that's the word. That's the word. Sometimes you got to take a step back and have a little bit better field awareness and understand that you should use a better choice of words. Okay, well, if the first time that I heard him say that he had to be taken out of the game because he was fatigued. The first thing in my mind was suck it up, all of these kind of things.
You're
instead
DH-ing.
Of just coming out and saying he's sore. He's sore. It's a little tight and he doesn't feel comfortable playing. How about that?
Yeah, but Kev, this is where they corkscrew themselves, right? Because if they say that he's re-injured his quad, you know, then it's
sore.
Tight again. Yes, but people are going to say, well, why'd you even have him in the lineup to begin with? And he should be 100% healthy.
People that would say that didn't watch the 2-3-0 pitches.
That's right.
That's why he's in the lineup. And that's why you hurry him back as fast as you can possibly hurry him back. It's just funny to me that whenever you hear him talk, the first thing out of their mouth they say is he's fatigued.
You think if he doesn't, but I know what you're saying, but you think if he doesn't hit those two homers, do you think this is even a question right now? Like, say he comes out and goes.
George Springer.
Say he goes 1-for-7 in those first two games.
Let me ask you a question, Ziggy. Would you rather have George Springer leading off or Kevin Biggio?
Well, don't ask me that because I'm high on Biggio leading off.
Well, you're watching a different game than I'm watching.
Yeah, you could have ended that sentence at high.
What do you mean? Biggio's 7-for-18 in the leadoff with 4 walks and has 7 hits batting everywhere else.
George Springer just hit, who cares? George Springer just hit 2 3-0 homers. Has Kevin Biggio ever done that?
No,
look, we all hitch our wagon to Kevin Biggio. Have to have him playing right field or third base. How dare we not play him every single day? Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I'm a big fan of him. I'm sure that every good team has to have a Kevin Biggio. But we really need to see him leading off or hitting fifth. Do we?
No.
That's the issue. We poke fun at this HP thing and writing up lineups. You can just see a guy going, putting in Kevin Biggio's name, and that computer just throwing out. But he's the greatest thing ever. He takes 17 pitches. And look, what Kevin Biggio does when he's hitting first right now, maybe 2 months from now when he's figured out how to time up that giant uppercut thing he's got and hit an elevated 96-mile-an-hour fastball, okay. If he's a couple of weeks straight in a row hammering some balls and maybe hit a couple of home runs to left field, I got you. Maybe you throw him up there. But right now he's not doing those things. He's not. And that what that does by leading him off is it takes at bats away from guys that aren't having trouble doing the things I just mentioned. That's the thing.
When Springer's back, yeah, I throw him later. I throw him nine. I throw him in the nine spot. That's what I would do with him when Springer's late enough.
Biggio.
Yeah, Biggio. I throw him in ninth. Yeah. That's what I put him in ninth.
Can you? He's 26 years old now, Biggio. Would you try to change that swing, Kevin, or is he who he is?
Yeah, I don't think that's possible.
I don't know if you want to mess with that at this point.
He got to the big leagues doing it one way, and now it's adjust to what you're swinging at. He don't like the ball up. Okay. Yeah, you get in line, there's thousands of them. But a lot of them that aren't capable of leveling out their swing and getting on top of the ball up, try not to swing at it. Just consistently not swing at it. They're not throwing you three balls up there in a row for strikes. They're not doing that. They're breaking ball you early in counts, and then they're elevating with two strikes. Okay, have that better approach of either I'm attacking early and really zoning in what I think I can time up the giant uppercut with the breaking ball or the fastball that has a little bit of sink down. You know that's why they're leading him off, because of bat path. And the guy that's on the mound has a little bit of sink or run to his ball, and they think he can time that. That's why he does it. That's why they're hitting him leadoff for fifth. It doesn't take brain surgery to figure these kind of things out. But now it's about, okay, if you're going to put him in these spots, now you got to help him a little bit figure out the way to lay off it. Because that's the only way he's going to take the next step forward. The league's figured him out. And Joe Siddle says this the best all the time on Blue Jays Central. They're attacking him. They're not afraid to pitch to him now. Like that's why when he first got called up and they really didn't know who he was, and you know, occasionally on a fastball down, he would hammer that thing and hit it in the third deck at the Rogers Center. They're going, uh-oh. But then they started figuring out that same thing I saw, is that big giant uppercut swing. Why would we, you know, pick at him all the time? Let's attack him, get after him, and make him, you know, get a hit that way to get himself on base. Yeah, again, we're picking about the lineup when it comes to Kevin Biggio. I just sometimes it makes you scratch your head on where they put him.
So if he had more of a Bichette approach, a little bit more aggressive, you think Biggio would be tougher?
There's no other. I mean, Vladdy's the only one you can compare to Bichette. Kevin Biggio is not even the same ballpark as those two guys when it comes to hand-eye coordination and bat speed and just being able to, when the ball hits the barrel, it's comes off differently than everybody else's. It's one of those things where how do you maximize what Kevin Biggio does the best at the plate? Is it leading off or is it in a run-producing spot? Hitting in the five spots, no joke at the big league level. It's really not. Because most of the time, especially in this lineup, if George is in this lineup and you got a guy like that hitting fifth, how many guys are going to be on base when he comes to the plate? And now they're going to go, okay, I know you don't like the ball up, so now what are you going to get? You're going to get a bunch of everything that I got from the thigh up. Because there's runners out there, and they got to get you out, and they got to get you out early. So it's like he's got to make an adjustment.
Are they hitting him five when Springer's playing because they feel the need at some point to break up all the right-handedness? Like, I don't – because to me, it's pretty obvious right now when Springer's healthy.
Yeah.
Springer, Bichette, Vladdy, Teoscar, Randall Grichuk.
Yeah. You're starting to throw Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in there, too.
And Gurriel is starting to come around, which is great to see.
Marcus Semien can turn around anybody's fastball.
Semien's a guy
like
who could
that too.
Hit five if he's red
just
hot.
Just mentioned seven guys. Would you put Kevin Biggio in front of any seven of those right now? Right now. I'm not talking about a month and a half from now, maybe. But right now, I'm saying that. I'm obviously, when George is healthy and all that thing, obviously you're not leading him off. But any of the other six guys, are you putting him in front of those guys?
No.
Because it takes away at bats from them. Would you rather Randall Grichuk having four at bats or five at bats?
Five.
It's like the manager for the Braves that intentionally walked Kevin Biggio
on a 3-1 count.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there, Kevin, like, and I understand baseball it's like any other sport. It's a game of mistakes. So it is far easier said than done. But I'm sitting there, like you or whatever, and I'm saying, all you got to do is throw Kevin Biggio a fastball above the belt.
Yeah.
And if you hump it up there at 95 to 97, he's not catching up. Mm-hmm. Might foul it off, whatever. How are you, I mean, I'll use a word for you. How are you capitulating 3-1?
Whoa.
You're two pitches away from striking him out.
Yeah.
How are you giving up, waving the white flag to get to a guy? And I give Randall Grichuk all the credit in the world.
Uh-huh.
He's been hitting all year. How do you put yourself in that position?
Yeah, I don't know. Righty on righty, you would think he's trying to spin it to him. You know, show Randall a fastball, spin a slider, middle away. have it start a strike in the ball. Look, you play percentages there. The percentage is that Kevin Biggio's not hitting very well. And the guy standing on the on-deck circle is getting a bunch of big hits. And is a lot more centered at the plate and has the eyes a lot closer to the strike zone. There's no reason. It just doesn't happen overnight that Randall Grichuk showed up and all of a sudden gives himself a better chance. You look at his approach now. He's a little bit more stationary. He's a little bit more bent at the knees, which puts his eyes closer to the strike zone. When your eyes are closer to the strike zone, what can you do now? You can tell where the strike zone's at and what I should and shouldn't swing at. It doesn't take a rocket scientist here. And to get his barrel in the same path all the time from where he starts his bat is genius because he's got a little short alligator arms. He wants to stay inside the baseball all the time. And I think he should be a pull hitter all the time. I know I like him occasionally on really tough guys throwing that ball to right field. That's okay. But I want him getting it out in front and hitting that thing to left center kind of thing. Look, Randall is, even when everybody's back and everybody's all healthy, Randall's playing.
I agree with you 100%. I've shut up about that because he's more than earned it.
Yeah, he has. And he's, for me, he's probably their best defending outfielder.
I agree with you.
Just because of the way he runs his routes, his jumps. He's a straight line kind of guy. It's rare that you ever see him run after a ball, and it looks weird when he's catching it because he's either late with his route, he's late getting there. No. The balls he's supposed to catch, he normally catches. That's all you can ask for.
Yeah, they were in a little bit of trouble. They went to Borucki from Stripling after Stripling, I think, had loaded the bases in the fifth inning on Sunday. And Charlie kept Stripling in to face Acuna before he went to Borucki lefty-lefty on Freddie Freeman. And Acuna got one, and he lined it deep to center field. I thought, that's not an easy play for a center fielder. Grichuk
ball hit right at you.
What are right you at you on a line, and you're going back for it.
Yeah,
and Grichuk played it perfectly, made it look easy.
He did. Now a lot of that again, I say this to Blair all the time. He laughs at me. The better you're hitting, the better defense you're going to play. Look at Bo Bichette. There's no reason why the last couple of days he's been a lot better defender is because he's raking. Now the big giant leg kick he's got because he's got two parts to it. He's got a little Josh Donaldson in him. If you can picture Josh Donaldson stand at the plate, that big old leg kick. There's two parts of it. Like he'd kick it once and then he'd kick it again. Why he's kicking it that much is basically trying to time up the pitcher. If I start a little bit earlier, I can kick my leg a little higher. Most human beings can't do that, but that's why you're seeing Bo take these big old giant swings. It's because he's late. When you're late like that, that's why you see his backside fall across the plate.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's giant. He's late with his big giant leg kick on velocity. Look, I'm picking because he's really, really good. But consistently, you can see why he'll go to his two-strike approach a lot, especially against guys that throw super hard. It's because he's trying to drive down and through it. He's an inside-out guy. You wouldn't really think that about Bo, right? But that he's an inside-out guy. But the balls he hits the right field, he's got backspin to him. Look, they're a pitcher hot away from being super good. They have no length to their starting pitching. I mean, this going 4 1/3 and 4 2/3 and 5 innings, he's got to stop. The bullpen can't take this anymore. They're going to take it for a little while because they don't have a choice, and they got Levin up down there in the bullpen, and you can bring in Bergen who throws, 30 pitches, through 28 fastballs. Yeah. How many lefties throw 92, throw 28 fastballs?
Yeah.
You know what that will tell you? If you're Steven Matz and you're in your clubhouse and you're throwing things because Charlie took you out with 92 pitches, you look up on the TV and you go, hey, look, that guy throws 92 miles an hour through 28 fastballs. How many runs he give up? Zero.
Zero.
Maybe I should try that. Stop not throwing my sinker. Sinker's his best pitch. Does 95. Why all of a sudden you're a cutter, changeup, slow curveball guy?
And he was doing that the other day when he struggled against Washington.
Threw 92 pitches yesterday, threw 38 sinkers. Am I missing something? I just, again, it's one of those things where when you walk away from the field, you can go to yourself. I got beat with my best pitcher.
You can sit there and talk about Ryu, right? He's going to pound you in.
Yeah, he's a finesse guy.
And he's gonna finesse you down and away.
Yeah.
Right? What is Robbie Ray doing? Other than damn near busting out of his shirt.
Yeah, me against you.
Yeah, like get something that fits, pal.
You got it. Show it.
Yeah,
that's what
I said. He's throwing 98 inner half, and he's painting Kevin.
Yeah,
this is a guy who was walking six hitters for every nine innings a couple years ago.
Yeah,
like he's painting. You can't hit that. You can't hit that effectively.
Trust me. As a hitter, 95 was sink from a left-handed pitch. You can't hit that either.
So these two, Ryu and Ray, are sticking with their game plans, and it's working. Mats has gone away from what was working for him in his first four starts of the year, the last two times he's been out
there. Yeah, I'm very confused. I have no idea. You're afraid of Oakland's lineup? Okay, good. They're a great. You could say they're a great defensive team.
And a night game in that park, ball shouldn't leave the yard.
Exactly right. Well, don't throw a BP heater right down the middle. How you don't throw a BP heater down the middle is you establish your best pitch first, and then you expand with other things. It's most human beings, meaning the pitcher, can't throw consistently your secondary pitches where you want to throw them all the time. Because you have to grip them certain different ways. A sinker is grip it and rip it. I'm going to hold it with the seams. I'm going to throw as hard as I can. And I'm going to aim for a spot at where the catcher's sitting. It doesn't take a brain surgeon. And all of a sudden with my changeup, I'm trying to finesse that thing in there so I'm not leaving it up and I'm not leaving it on the plate. Where did he leave it last night? On the plate up.
But if you're Mats and your bread and butter is that changeup and he doesn't have it, what do you do if you're Mats?
It's only his bread and butter after he establishes his sinker. He's pitching backwards. Mm-hmm. He threw a bunch of cutters last night. I guess that's a cutter. Or it's a slider morphed into
slider.
Something. Oh,
yeah.
That I know what the thing says, but it's looked to me, it's had slider movement. And it's 88 mm-hmm. to 89 miles an hour. Slider's like 83, 84, so it's not a slider. So he's morphed that thing into a cutter. He's trying to get weak contact instead of getting after people. The only guy that knows that's him and maybe Petey on why they're doing that and why he's totally flipped on how he had three really good starts. He had three really good starts because he was throwing his sinker about 47% of the time. Somebody that's smarter than me explain that.
In the next test is going to be a good one for him because he'll pitch in Houston.
Yeah,
Short porch and left, the Crawford boxes, and they got some right-handers who can rake, whether it's Altuve, Correa, Bregman. You go on down the list. Let's see here. A 416 number, Dan from Georgetown texting in. After a week in Cabo, I'm fatigued when I get home. So people are starting to play on the George Springer.
Everybody that worked in their entire life shows up fatigued. You know, I joked with Blair yesterday. If I missed a game because I was fatigued, I'd have never played, ever. You imagine. Guys that are in the minor leagues who get on buses for 15 hours, get off a bus, 25 minutes later, got to strap it on to go out and try and hit 98.
And they're eating Do you think they're fatigued? They're eating Big Macs on the side stop on the road on that bus trip.
Do they care if we're fatigued? That's what I'm saying. The word fatigued is a bit much to take.
Chad from Peterborough wants to know, and I think this is tied to our Mats conversation and the pitch selection, is Danny calling a bad game back there?
That's a solid take. You know, again, we're not there. I can't walk up and ask Danny. That pitcher has to have conviction in what he wants to throw. And it just doesn't seem like, for whatever reason, Steven Matz has conviction in his sinker. Why that is, he's the only one that knows that, maybe Pete Walker. I have no idea. But you notice when he throws it, like, I know he gave up a couple of hits on it last night, but that's because he missed location with it, not because when he's throwing it where he wants to throw it. Maybe that's why.
Maybe that's why he gave up on it.
He's
not feeling it.
What, 38 times? And it's very sporadic. It's more of you're throwing it to set up the other three things you're throwing. It's just a little bit backwards for me.
And he got the double play ground ball in the first inning.
Because the first inning he was throwing it. Like he threw the first 10 out of the 18 pitches he threw were sinkers. And then after the second inning, he totally abandoned it. Then it was the changeup thing and the cutter and the slider off the cutter and then the slow breaking ball. Why these lefties have success? Any lefty in baseball, you name one, because they establish in and then they can expand away with a secondary pitch. That's the only way they're going to have success.
And I'm thinking of Ryu and Ray from Blue Jays examples.
Ryu throws 89 miles an hour, and he's carving people up. Why? He doesn't always throw a secondary pitch where he wants to, but why he can get away with it is because he establishes in, gets the righty opening up the front hip. You can count on one hand how many people can consistently, mechanically get the barrel to a fastball in. You can count them on one hand. They don't like it. I know. I used to try. They don't like it. That's why they throw it in there. The good ones do. Go to that spot. Even if you're missing in there, get it close enough to where that puts them in their mind, and this is how you're going to try and get us out. And then you can expand with everything. And then you maybe could get away with, guiding a changeup in, and maybe a guy swing through it or foul it off the end because he's opening up the front hip. It's just a little frustrating because we've seen how good he could be the first three times he went out because he's established that pitch. And now the last two times, he looks like he's looked now. It's a little frustrating to watch. That's all.
A little bit earlier on, you said Randall Grichuk's their best defensive outfielder.
I think so. Yeah.
So that tells me that you feel he should stay in center field even when George Springer is good enough or healthy enough to come back and play the field. So are you thinking Springer in right? Is that where you would play George Springer?
Do you like Teoscar in left? I don't. Have you seen him in left? He's not very good over there. He doesn't it over there. And he doesn't like to DH. That's an issue you're going to have. Again, obviously, it's going to be walking up to George going, hey, where do you want to play? Center, right? You know, he's making these calls. That's the first and foremost thing you're going to do. But it makes your team better, and it keeps the guy on the field. Metrics say that George Springer's a better right fielder than he is center fielder. So you kill two birds with one stone. Your defense is better, and you keep him on the field. It's a no-brainer for me, but it's probably not going to work out that way. And everybody will be throwing their hands in the air because they think he's a center fielder and they want him to play center, and they gave him all this money. Well, you gave him $160 million to play center field. No, you didn't. You gave him $160 million to help carry your team offensively. What he does in the outfield's gravy. But I want to keep him on the field, right? And it seems to me like his lower half might be an issue, at least for a little while. So when he is 100%, quotes, air quotes, that's just where I'd put him. But, again, you got to figure out what you're going to do with Teoscar. And Lourdes, now that he's hitting, you know, sometimes you can have too many. I guess that's a good problem to have.
Five, you went,
Okay, good. Start it again. No. Your microphone was not on. Yeah, you're all back right. Now. You're back.
Good?
I saw all the lips moving. I didn't hear any sound, panicked a little bit.
Yeah. I was like, did Danny Jansen not go 0-35? Nobody was looking at me. I was like, oh, we're not supposed to talk about this anymore. But no, you said you got a good story. Kevin, about going for 0-24?
No. Well, I mean, I told a story yesterday that one of the times I was 0-24, I sold a car a little earlier than I thought I was going to sell it. Because 0-24, and I thought it was the car's fault. But it didn't work out. All of a sudden, I'm not getting any hits, and I'm walking. It was a Toyota 4Runner.
Okay.
So now I'm not getting any hits, and I'm walking everywhere. This wasn't very smart. But that's what you do when you're not getting any hits. You do things outside the box.
Your glasses six times.
I haven't had to have glasses yet, which is pretty cool. But look, the Danny Jansen thing, it's obvious he's not a great hitter. That's first and foremost. So 0-35, those are tough stretches. And starting a season, the issue with when you start a season in a slump is everything you did in the off season that you thought was going to work, all of that time you put in the cage and whatever he was trying to do, and his Zoom call obviously was saying that I'm trying to get the ball in the air. And then you go, what was he, 2-for-11 in the first four games, and then he went on his 0-35 slump. It's obviously not working. So now what do? Do you go back in the cage and completely change everything? That's the thing. So it's again, they got to be real careful. But now, obviously, with Kirk out, he's going to have to play a lot more than he probably was going to have to play.
You're in 7:30 to 8 o'clock every Tuesday and Thursday morning.
Yep.
What if we opened up the phone lines on Thursday?
Why not?
You're big for that? You're
yeah,
down?
Of course.
All right. So we will open up the phone lines on Thursday morning. We'll read some texts as we've been doing.
Yeah.
Adam in Oakville wants to know, Kevin, is a hot dog a sandwich?
No.
It's a piece of meat between bread.
It's not ham, turkey, or whatever else you would eat.
Well, it's ham, turkey, and a bunch of other things.
Yeah. Hot dog's not that. Oh, okay. It is together.
Yeah, it's just...
It's like the bad parts, all the meat.
All jammed in between bread. I think it is a sandwich.
You do?
Yeah.
We're going to have to agree to disagree on this one.
Number of years ago, Jose...
I got to ask you, does it look like a sandwich?
It doesn't look like a traditional sandwich.
Then there you go.
Okay. All right. I'll never forget a few years ago on one of his social media things, Jose Bautista was doing a Q&A and somebody asked him, and it took him a minute to explain how he takes care of his body and he doesn't eat hot dogs before he actually got to answering the question.
If it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck,
it might be a sandwich.
Might be a hot dog.
Well, yeah. You're staying up late this week, pal.
Yes.
Love it that you came in.
Thanks for having me.
We'll do it again on Thursday.
Yeah. Maybe George will play.
Maybe George will play. It depends on the fatigue level.
Yeah, I bet he's tired. You think he's sleeping in?
You know the ex-hockey players like Ziggy. They're all over
All baseball players sleeping. You guys sleep until 11. You go to the ballpark at noon, have a hot dog, hit a couple balls. You have your hair flow going.
There's no such thing as a stupid morning skate. Do it all in one fell swoop. You play at 7 o'clock at night, show up at 2, get your treatment, get out for batting practice, take some ground balls or whatever. If that's your job, then get back into the clubhouse.
You know what I love about baseball players? The best part is not all what I just mentioned. It's when they lie on their back and get stretched out before the game with one of the strength.
You got to make sure you're loose.
It's a quick twitch sport, man. You can be standing still for a while, and then you got to move real quick.
We're fine-tuned athletes.
Damn right.
My favorite part.
Oh, just the disrespect from it.
It's terrible.
We'll have a Barker Ziggy cage match. Yeah. At some point. It'll be the main event. We'll do it again Thursday. Kev will open up the phone lines. Look forward to it.
Yeah.
Kevin Barker with Jeff Blair this afternoon, 2 o'clock for Baseball Central. You can get them 2 o'clock each and every weekday here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Kevin, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Jennifer Botterill, Sportsnet NHL analyst, multiple-time Olympic gold medalist on the Leafs, on Tom Wilson, and more in just a little bit. Here's what we're talking about this morning on Leadoff Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the Leafs are moving closer to securing the North Division crown, but they lost. They had a 2-1 lead in Montreal into the final minute of the third period. Philip Deneau scored the game-tying goal, and Cole Caulfield scored the game-winning goal in overtime. So the Leafs come away with a point. Auston Matthews, Mitch Marner had a 2-on-0 in 3-on-3 extra time and could not convert. Other North Division scores to pass along, the struggle is real for the Winnipeg Jets. They lose 2-1 to the Ottawa Senators last night. That is 7 consecutive regulation time defeats for Winnipeg. Montreal is now tied with Winnipeg for third in the division. The Oilers beat the Canucks 5-3. Edmonton is obviously looking good for the second seed in the North Division. The Blue Jays played late last night and lost 5-4 in Oakland, snapping their 3-game winning streak. Of note, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had 3 more hits. He also scored a run. His batting average, .356. His OPS, .1140. And the Raptors have a must-win in Los Angeles tonight against the Clippers. The Wizards won last night. The Raptors are 3 full games back of Washington for the 10th and final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. The Raptors, and the Wiz for that matter, each have 7 games left to play. Jennifer Botterill is a Sportsnet NHL analyst. You see her all over your TV screen. She is a multiple-time Olympic gold medalist, and she is with us now to talk about the Leafs, to talk about the Tom Wilson situation, and whatever else comes up. Jennifer, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
It's great to have you on. So we're gonna put you on the spot. We've been doing this with our guests, and like I always frame it like this: to answer one way is not to diminish the accomplishments of the other. But what impresses you more, Auston Matthews closing in on 40 goals in what for him will be at most a 52-game season, given that he missed 4 games due to injury, or yes. Connor McDavid with 4 more points last night? He's got 91 points in 50 games for the Oilers.
Oh, that is putting me on the spot. They're both so, incredible. The Matthews one, I think with the injury and coming back and finding a way to be so productive through the wrist injury. But how can you choose one? I mean, McDavid's been so dominant, highlight reel every night. And that is such a tough question. Can we just both put them on the top level?
All right.
Fence
sitting is allowed. Fence sitting is allowed.
Oh,
they're both great players. We won't deny it. We won't deny it.
Oh, that's so good. I mean, fun for all of us to follow, right?
Josh Anderson said yesterday that he was asked the difference between McDavid and Matthews and said that while Matthews has Marner on the ice, what do you think he would have done this year without a Marner on his line? Do you think it's 10 goals less, 5 goals less, or do you think Matthews does the same thing without Marner? Because McDavid doesn't play with Draisaitl all the time. I think somebody said 17% of his shifts he plays with Draisaitl, but for the most part, he's by himself out there.
Mm-hmm. It's, I think Matt Matthews is a player who would be exceptional in any situation, but you do need to include the Marner conversation, whether it's good for an extra 5 or 7 or 8 goals on the season. You know, Marner is sometimes, because Matthews is so spectacular, sometimes I feel like Marner doesn't even get enough credit that he deserves, that he is so, I mean, in terms of the vision of the ice that he has, and you know, some of the passes that he makes, you know, except for that 1-2-1-0 in overtime last night. But many of the passes are so beautiful. I mean, it's just, so he deserves a lot of credit for the chemistry that they have and their point production offensive sort of domination. So, I mean, credit to Matthews, but also I think credit is due to Marner and for his incredible play as well.
With Jennifer Botterill, I, you know, it's funny. Sometimes you're wowed by moments in sports and you say, I don't think I've ever seen that before, and I don't think we'll ever see that again. I guess it's less positive, but in a weird way, I don't think you'll ever see Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews on a 2-on-0 ever again and it not produce a shot.
I agree with that assessment.
Like, it's one of those things, right? Like, it's crazy.
But that's an example. You know what? I think Marner is such a phenomenal passer that in that situation, I think Matthews almost gave him, try to set him up to shoot, but he believes so much in Matthews that just tried one extra pass, right? Too tight on top of the crease there. So, but it was, you're right. I think any other time that's probably more than likely that's going to get buried.
All right. I'm going to set up a scenario for you that is different than where we are now, because really, let's be honest, and we'll get into Nick Foligno here in just a little bit. The MO over the final four games here is stay healthy, please. And right. Foligno didn't last night, which we'll discuss in a second. But you're up 2-1, final minute of regulation time, and Jack Campbell, who was very good last night, mm-hmm. allows a game-tying goal to Philip Deneau that, to me, Jen, has to be stopped. And mm-hmm. and if this is the middle of the season and the Leafs are on a 2- or 3-game losing skid and that is Frederik Andersen, we're spending a whole lot more time this morning talking about that goal than we have today, again, because we're just waiting for the end of the regular season and it's so clear the Leafs are going to win the division. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. That's a problem goal in a playoff game if that exact same scenario comes up.
Yes. So for Leafs fans, perhaps they're thankful that it happened last night and not in the playoff stretch. And but you're right. I mean, I was taking notes, you know, a number of notes throughout the game, and Campbell was so strong. I mean, it was a tight game, and it was either, you know, a tie game or a one goal game, and he made some huge saves previously in the game. So it was tough to see, tough for the outcome, but at the same time, it is this time of the season where the team's focused on the playoff run, so they're not going to spend a lot of time lingering on those, you know, the last minute of the game and the overtime goal, but hopefully build on those good elements and the big saves that were made earlier. So in terms of timing, again, probably better now, right, than in a crucial playoff run.
What do you think's hampering this power play? We've been talking about it every morning and trying to figure out what they need to do. Now we saw last night Rasmus Sandin's on the first power play unit, Riley's off. I wonder your thoughts on him and just the fact that he coughed up a puck for, you know, a long 2-on-1, yet mm-hmm. Keith stuck with him. He didn't pull him off it. What were your thoughts on that and Sandin as a whole?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Sandin has stepped in and really trying to prove, right, that he can be an impact player, you know, not down the road, but right away. And what you saw last night, I mean, that's an example, too, of a team that does have the luxury right now of being in a good place and of making some adjustments to see what they think will be the most productive and the best combination for, you know, whether it's the power play or the lineup in general come playoff time. So that was a chance for them to try some different things. And he had some really promising play as well in terms of confidence with the puck, in terms of mobility, in terms of finding the right seam. But, and you're right, there was the downside too of the turnover on the power play where they had the long 2-on-1. So, you know, it wasn't a perfect game, but he's done a lot of good things to make a strong case for himself.
With Jennifer Botterill, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So not sure what to make of the Nick Foligno situation, and I suppose only time will tell the state of his injury and what the Leafs share. They're calling it upper body. It kind of looked lower body just because he jammed on the brakes as Jake Allen made a relatively easy save, and he was slumped over as he went off the ice. I don't know. My only thought, Jen, is if there's a silver lining now in this revamped North Division schedule because of Vancouver's COVID-19 situation. Like, if Nick Foligno needs that extra week, because the regular season was initially supposed to end this Saturday night. If it's another week and a half, two, till the playoffs start, maybe that's what Foligno needs, and it's a blessing in disguise. I guess we'll find out.
Right, because we don't know exactly what the assessment was, but they're in a situation right now where he has the potential to get some rest, and he's just been, I mean, the character and the personality, along with his style of play on the ice, has been a really strong addition to the Leafs in terms of just adding that other element of depth and the way Foligno described it, right? When he came, it was just about playing heavy, in the right areas. And that's something that I think is the team's really, really embraced. So it's hard to know, right? I mean, in terms of it could be a muscle pull. It could be something more serious. But it's a chance right now for that team to try to get everybody, Foligno included, as healthy as possible over this next window of time.
With two more games against the Canadiens, do you think it's more important to, I heard Muzzin and a couple of their players mention that the Leafs are going to approach it as a mini series before the playoffs. Or do you think it's better to throw different looks at it? I know Justin Bourne talked a little bit about this, not maybe changing up the power play. I know I mentioned Sandin on power play one. We don't know if that's going to be the situation come the playoffs. Or do you throw a different systems look or different penalty killers at the Canadiens? Do you do something like that, or do you try to win these games if you're the Leafs?
I think it's likely more of the former, where you have the chance to experiment a little. And as I mentioned, right, they're in a good place. They've earned this position in the division. So now they have the chance to make some adjustments and to assess in different situations and to not give away all of their strategy or all their looks and specialty teams, or line combinations or D pairings, whatever it might be. So for the team, they should feel proud that they've earned the opportunity to be in this sort of situation where, of course, they want to win the games. Of course they do, against a rival and their competitors. Of course they're going to go out to win, but it's also a chance for the organization to try a few different combinations, right, to see what they think will be best for playoffs.
I'll follow up based on your response, Jennifer. So I'll give you the broader question first, because I'm interested in your take. What is your assessment of what went down with Tom Wilson, Pavel Buchnevich, and Artemi Panarin at MSG last night?
There's no place for that. If players are in a vulnerable position on the ice, even if it's a half shove or a punch with their face down towards the ice, there's no place. There has to be some sort of restraint for player safety, for integrity of the game. So there's just there has to be a level of restraint.
So is it the league's responsibility to handle this Tom Wilson situation, factoring in that he's got a relatively lengthy rap sheet, including a 7-game suspension for the play on Brandon Carlo of the Bruins less than 2 months ago?
Mm-hmm.
Is it incumbent upon the New York Rangers at some point to respond? Because I feel like we're going back to the 80s if we go down that path.
Yes. So certainly my perspective is that the league needs to handle it. I think the game's evolved in terms of that approach. So I feel like the league decision is very important.
Do you think that teams will see something like this and will they go and try to, like, do you see it going the other way? We know we've talked about it all morning about how the league's changed, right? Fighting's kind of not in the game. But do you see teams with Tom Wilson? You see, like, do you see the Rangers going out and getting someone because they don't have anybody to take on a Tom Wilson, right? And I just, I feel like if I'm a general manager and I see this or someone in my division, you have to have an answer for that. Because say Panarin misses the playoffs, is that worth it not going out to get somebody like a Tom Wilson? I know they're not lying around everywhere. What Tom Wilson does, like, how many tough guys can score and play with one of the best goal scorers in Ovechkin in, in the game, right? There's not many of them out there.
No, exactly. And do teams have to do that? I mean, that's for the management to decide. I think they think that's beneficial to protect their players. I guess I'm hopeful that the league continues to make decisions to deter that kind of play so that teams can focus on making the game the best that it can be and the most entertaining for fans in terms of skill level, in terms of execution on the ice, in terms of the best level of play of hockey, as opposed to feeling like they need to get tough guys in the lineup to protect players. So you're right. There are two different directions, and each team can decide what they think they need in a lineup. But I would be hopeful that the league continues to try to deter this sort of these sort of actions to protect their players and to protect the integrity of the game.
We're counting down to the playoffs, Jennifer, and we'll certainly reach out. We appreciate your perspective. Thank you for this, and promise we'll chat soon.
Okay, thanks so much. Have a great day.
You bet. Jennifer Botterill, Sportsnet's NHL analyst and multiple-time Olympic gold medalist. Texter coming in. So when Matthews scores his little tap-ins or uncontested shots, he's great. But when the Leafs goalie allows a goal that should have been stopped, wow, from Mike, the 416 number.
Okay, so that was, you want to know what? Is that a reference to Matthews' goal last night, a little tap-in?
Well, I don't know. I think he's saying in general, I'll read the texted again. When Matthews scores his little tap-ins or uncontested shots, he's great. But when the Leafs goaltender allows a goal, it should have been stopped. I'm just saying that's a puck that's got to be stopped in a playoff game in that moment, in the final minute of the third period, protecting a one-goal lead.
First off, with the Matthews, I haven't seen many tap-ins this year from him. Guys that score 40 in 50 games, half of them are tap-ins, believe me.
Well,
there are a lot of tap-ins. I haven't seen them. They've been great setups from Marner. A lot of them, I'm giving Marner a lot of credit in what Matthews has done this year, but they haven't been easy goals. Matthews, did you see his celebration after that goal? He wasn't happy that he's close to 40 or big goal in the game. That expression from Matthews at that time and how excited does he usually get that excited? Not too often. In a game against Montreal, end of the season, who cares, right? Matthews is happy in that situation because of what he did before the goal. That's the 2021 Matthews, what everyone wants out of him. It was hard on a puck. It was a battle for the puck behind the net. I think it was Thornton behind the net with him.
Yep.
That wasn't part of Matthews' game before. Yeah, he's great at stick checking and lifting sticks up, but that was him expanding his game. And I call it the comfort zone, and he's finding his way outside of it. That's what happened with that goal. And then he goes right to the front of the net. It was a battle, win his battle, and to the front of the net, out-muscle Habs defender, and get a stick on it. You can say it was fluky, it went off a couple guys, whatever. There's three things he did in that it was not an easy goal. It was not a one-timer peeling out from the outside the dot. It wasn't a one-timer on the power play. It wasn't a three-on-three goal. That was the goal he's going to have to score come playoff time. And that's when I see him celebrate like that, it's a good feeling for a player when you do something that you're not used to doing and you've become a better player. You've found that extra gear. And that's that situation with Matthews last night when he tips that pocket.
All right. And I think it's a reminder too, Ziggy, like Austin's 23 and a half years old now. And these guys come in, he scores four goals in his first NHL game. He scores 40 goals in his first NHL season. He's 19 years old. But 4 years later, like, these guys are now in their primes as men. Like, they're not teenagers anymore. So they're not 19-year-olds still growing into themselves going up against 28 to 30-year-old brutes. Like, Austin Matthews always had the skill, always had the ability that set him apart from most other players, and now he's also got the strength and the leverage to match that. Like, he has that ability to dominate in all areas of the ice.
Yeah. It's another level for him. I think he has one more gear. I know he's playing better defensively. He's scoring 40 and what, like, I think there's one more gear with him. I think he's that good. I have that much expectation in him. And I know you're going to say 40 goals in 50 games. Like, come on. What more do you want this guy to do? Well, him and McDavid both have to win in the playoffs. Like, and I know Stephen Brent was talking about, well, there's a lot of great players that haven't won, but I keep going back to Steve Yzerman. Steve Yzerman isn't Steve Yzerman without actually winning. He's one of the greats, but when you say Steve Yzerman, you think of a winner, right? You think of a different kind of player, and I'm telling you, he wasn't like Steve Yzerman. Wasn't Steve Yzerman until he won.
Well, and there's the famous Scotty Bowman sat him down, right? Do you want to be the 150 point a year guy, which is what Steve Yzerman was as a young player in the mid to late 80s on bad Red Wings teams, teams, like the Red Wings and the Leafs were always fighting to not be the team that missed the playoffs in the Norris division. Right? Because it was a five-team division and four made it. And then in the early 90s, Bowman gets to Detroit, sits Yzerman down and says, look, you might not be a 150-point guy. You might be a 90-point guy. You might be a 100-point guy. You're also winning cups.
Mm-hmm.
And Yzerman bought in.
And what he's talking about there, if you want to compare it to where this Leafs team is at, when the playoffs start in a couple weeks, are the Leafs going to be a hard team to play against? When you look to the top four, and a lot of it's going to come down to Tavares, Nylander, Matthews, and Marner, are they going to be a tough team to play against? Will they be able to win the 1-0, 2-1, 3-2 games? Right? That's what it's going to come down to with this team. And can they put their point, like, will they show, like, everyone wants to know, are the Leafs going to show up in the playoffs? I think they can score 40 goals and Tavares can have 100 points and Nylander can have 30 goals and Marner can have 100 assists. Like, that's all great, but they need to be tougher to play against, and you will see it. It will all come out once the playoffs start, and that's what they're going to get evaluated on this season. I don't care what they, like, 40 goals. If they burn out in five games in the playoffs,
won't matter.
You think anybody in Toronto cares about 40 goals? Or 100 assists?
No, it's a hell of an accomplishment. But
it is.
But you're right. And what did we say before the puck dropped on game one of the season back in January? Talk to us in May. Like that, we're now 2 weeks away or something, whenever it starts. 2 weeks away from what we've all been waiting for. And that'll be the verdict on the season. And Kyle Dubas went and got some players, I mean, whether it was in the offseason, the Simmons of the world, the Thorntons of the world, brought Spezza back, and then he adds Foligno, and let's hope Foligno is all right, didn't look so good last night. He went and got some guys, Hutton for some depth on the back end, that changed the supplement to this team, made them look a little different, and we'll see if it pays off for them. Something to chew on for great Canadian meat. Should ask you for a prediction. Who rests tonight for the Raptors? Gets the Clippers.
Like, what is happening there?
Well, they're three games. The Wiz got another triple-double out of Russell Westbrook because that's what he does. And they won last night. So the Raptors have seven games left, as do Washington, including a big game against each other, if you want to call it a big game, on Thursday night down in Tampa. So the Raps are 1-2 on this West Coast swing in L.A. against the Clippers tonight. Three games back. So they got to beat the Wizards Thursday. We understand that. But to catch Washington, the Raptors have to win out, and the Wizards have to play under 500 basketball the rest of the way. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. I'm just like, I wanted them to tank. Like, once Lowry doesn't go anywhere, I know I said once they get in, you never know with this group. But I mean, if it's not happening, just I don't know how they've pulled off some of these wins this year. Some resting guys, picking guys up, coming off the bench. Like, I don't know how Nurse does it. Like, Nurse doesn't want to tank. I don't know any coach that does.
The players and coaches never do. The front offices can make it happen, right? Because this guy, that guy, whatever, needs to rest. You pay the fine if you violate the league's injury or resting protocols the way that they did.
I'm more concerned about getting ready for next season. Like, I want to know who's the heir apparent to Kyle. That's what I want to know. Is Fred the guy? They drafted Malachi Flynn. Is he going to come and be the one? I'm not sold on Freddie taking over from Kyle in Kyle's role in a full-time, like the amount of minutes and what he's done for the Raptors. I'm not sold on it yet. And I Malachi Flynn's going to have a lot to do with that, or who they go after in free agency. Because at this point, it's about getting ready for next season. Even if they do find a way into the playoffs, we're not expecting much, right?
Raps and Clippers tonight. Joe Micheletti is the analyst. Rangers television broadcasts on the MSG network. He was there at the Garden last night when Tom Wilson did his latest thing. We'll get Joe's perspective and what he thinks the league should do to deal with the situation, if it should do anything at all. Joe Micheletti next.
This is on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You know where this is from, Ziggy? This tune? Well, guess you didn't dress up and go to any of the movies, then. Well, Star Wars. Cantina? Was this played in, like, the Star Wars bar? By the way, at some point today, do yourself the favor. Go to YouTube. Richard Pryor, Star Wars bar. May the 4th be with you. Watch Richard Pryor's Star Wars bar comedy scene. It is well worth your time. If you're just waking up this morning, you haven't caught the highlights, or I don't know, maybe you saw the game. The Rangers and Capitals played last night, and Tom Wilson pulled his latest stunt. Pavel Buchnevich and then Artemi Panarin, the victims of the latest stunt. And the Rangers have been formally eliminated from the playoffs now. That happened last night, and Artemi Panarin will not appear, we're told, in any of their three remaining games, suffering what could have been a concussion, maybe a shoulder problem. I suppose it remains to be seen. But Tom Wilson back at it to get a firsthand account of what went down and what he thinks should happen next. We welcome to the program from MSG Network. He is the analyst on New York Rangers TV broadcasts. Joe Micheletti is here. Joe, how are you?
Scott, Mike, I'm doing great, thanks. How are you guys?
We're well. So, I mean, you were there. You saw it with your own two eyes. We've watched it on the highlight loop all morning long. What is your take, your firsthand assessment of what went down with Tom Wilson at Madison Square Garden last night?
Well, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is, what are you doing? Like yeah. What are you, what can you possibly be thinking, you know? And then on my way home, I'm thinking, you know, for anyone that's in hockey, I think, or fan, doesn't matter, that's ever listened to his press conferences, including the one where he came back from the 7-game suspension and he talked about trying to learn how to be, you know, play under the rules and making sure that he is more important to his team to stay on the ice and not get suspended. And I mean, it's now, everybody would just laugh at anything he could possibly say in front of a camera because of what he did. Totally, he provoked the entire incident. No one did anything except him. And then to think that here are five players on the power play that that are non-combatants, and you want to try and hurt everybody that's on the ice, and you started by purposely with Buchnevich on the ice, purposely just falling on his head, and then trying to rub his face into the ice, and you got your stick and your glove, and then you sucker punch him while he's down to start for no reason. All he was doing is what every other player in the National Hockey League would do, loose puck around the crease, and you're trying to put it in the net. And he gets knocked down. Play should have ended. But instead, he provoked the entire incident. And you know what? Good for Strome, who saw it, you know, because you had to be at the right angle. Good for Strome, who saw it. All he did was try to get Wilson off of Buchnevich so that, you know, maybe, you know, there wouldn't be any more damage. And then he goes completely berserk. And you know, then the incident with Panarin, it just, when you think of what possibly could have happened to Panarin with what he did, pulling his hair and then backwards and slamming him to the ice. I mean, we still don't know. We haven't heard anything about, about his injuries. All we know is what you reported, which was that he's going to miss the final three games. But, you know, so, I mean, he's a complete bully that thinks he can do and play only the way that he decides to play without regards to rules or respect for the game or respect for players. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, here we are, and we have so many people around the world, not just Canada and the U.S., that love this sport for what it is, for all the greatness of what it is. And it's certainly changed over the years. But you know what? We, as parents, we've always, you know, we've encouraged our kids to want to play the game because of the greatness of the game. And if you're a parent watching this last night and you're sitting there and you're thinking, do I want my kids to have to deal with something like this and at this high risk for, and there aren't many of them in the game. I mean, I don't know if there's anybody other than Wilson that would do something like this. And you got to think, you know, what is going on here? Are there not rules to protect these players? Especially, you know, the NHL has, you know, so many great stars, and you know what? They you know, to have to deal with this is just not right.
What kind of suspension do you think, or if any, do you think the NHL suspends Tom Wilson, or, and if so, what do you think he gets?
I don't know. I don't know. I know the NHL certainly cares about this and their star players. And, you know, this was, I don't know. I think they probably look at this differently because this was not started by a Ranger. You know, nobody cheap shotted Tom Wilson. No one, you know, slashed him, speared him, did anything to, and we know this is an emotional sport. Like, none of that happened. You know, so that's what makes this, again, I you know, you ask yourself, what the hell could he possibly be thinking to do something like this, especially after all these things he said about, you know, going down the playoffs, the importance of the team, the importance of the playoffs. You know, that's all garbage. That's all just garbage, what he says and how he really thinks. And so, I you know what, I can't excuse me, I can't answer that. What he did was you know, just off the charts. And it was not a reaction to anybody provoking him. This was just him trying to be a complete bully and have no respect for the game or the players that were on the ice. So I can't answer that. I can't answer that. But I have a lot of trust in the league and what they do. And they in seeing this, there's no one over there that would be feeling good about what happened.
With Joe Micheletti, I mean, he was suspended, Wilson was, 7 games for an incident with the Boston Bruins, Brandon Carlo, 2 months ago. So, and the rap sheet is long. It predates the Carlo thing to 2018, but it is long nonetheless. There was an incident with Zach Aston-Reese of the Penguins in the playoffs 3 years ago that got Wilson 3 playoff games. The only way to hurt him and to hurt his team right now is to nick him for some playoff games this year, Joe.
Right.
I mean, I respect your point of view that you trust the league on this. I don't hold out much hope, because even our conversation this morning around the table here has reverted at times to, well, do the Rangers need to go out and get a guy to act as a deterrent? And then that's one take. And then the other take is, well, I'd take Tom Wilson on my team any day. I mean, we watched Nazem Kadri here in Toronto walk an edge for the Maple Leafs for a few years. Very effective player, 30-plus goals multiple times. But it caught him in the playoffs 2 years in a row against the same team, the Boston Bruins. You know, at some point, all of this has got to catch up with Tom Wilson one way or the other. I'm not as optimistic as you that it will.
Yeah. Well, and I don't blame you. I mean, this is just, there are going to be a multitude of opinions on what should be done. I'm not sure the league this morning totally knows exactly what they're going to do. I'm sure the discussion amongst them and probably more than just the Department of Player Safety. This is going to include, I think, everyone in the league to discuss this because of the nature of the incident. So, I think those discussions will range from, no suspension to multiple games in the playoffs and maybe a round or two. So it you get a player like this, and you're right about, because I saw somebody last night right afterwards and there are 30 teams that would make a trade for him while he's sitting in the penalty box, and yet at the same time, most of these people would just go, well, wait a second. There's something wrong with this. There's something wrong with him that he is not, he doesn't play the game anymore to provide, room and space and protection for his teammates. He is playing a game to hurt people. That's what he wants to do. So everything he said in the past about trying to change the game, it no longer holds any water. He is out there when he wants to, and someone's in a vulnerable position, he wants to hurt that person. That's what he wants to do. So how the league deals with that, I don't know. I don't know either. But I'm just going to be again. I'm going to leave it to the league and hope then they'll try to do what's right. For sure, they'll try and do what's right. But there will be, no matter what the decision is, it's like anything else. There are going to be arguments, and people say it was a wrong decision. Gave him too much, didn't give him enough. That's the nature of the beast.
We haven't watched, I haven't watched as much as the other, around the league as I usually do in most years. I just wanted your take on the East and what you think of the Penguins, Capitals, Bruins, and Islanders, and who do you think will come out of it?
I would say that the four teams that made it were the four teams that were expected. I think that had the Rangers been able to sneak in, that would have been something that no one had anticipated. And so I give them full marks for getting to this point with such a young and up-and-coming team. But any of those four teams that are in it now, have a chance to win the whole thing. Because you've got, for me, the question with Washington is, is their goaltending, two young goaltenders, without, much playoff experience, how are they going to hold up? Other than that, they've got obviously a team that certainly can score, and they've got, a championship pedigree. With the Bruins, you just never count them out because of their work ethic, even though they're a lot younger on defense, and that's probably, going to be a main factor for them in the playoffs. Pittsburgh, to me, even though they got spanked last night, but this is a team now, and especially when they get Malkin back, and they're getting the goaltending, which is something that no one expected them to get with these two goaltenders, but they're getting it now, and can that hold up? So, and of course the Islanders, you can't ever count them out because, they can beat you 1-0 on any given night with the way they defend. The question is, Are they going to have enough offense, which has been the question in years past, to score the critical goals at a time in a playoff when they need it? But you can't count them out with the way they defend.
Joe, we're up against it, so we'll leave it there. Appreciate your perspective. Fascinating to see how this Wilson situation plays out. Enjoy the Rangers' final three games. We'll hope the best for Panarin, and we'll catch up again down the road.
Okay, guys. Thanks so much. Great to be with you.
Joe Micheletti, Rangers analyst for the MSG Network, does the games with Sammy Rosen. Yeah. If we had more time, I would ask him one more question. Alex Lafreniere, first overall pick, 10 goals, 19 points in his rookie season. Took him forever to break the goose egg. And even Kaapo Kakko, you know, 9 goals in 46 games this year for the Rangers. Like, that, Lafreniere is your first overall pick in the 2020 draft. Kakko went second overall in 2019. I know it comes at different times for different players, Zig, but when you have a second overall pick one summer and a first overall pick the next, those guys need to turn out to be guys for you.
Yeah, I think the whole thing around Panarin leaving the team, and they had a bit of a lull. You had your top prospects. They really didn't have the hottest start, right? What did Lafreniere start with? Like one assist through his first 10 or 11 games or something like that. It took him a while to score. So I just think it's, when you don't get off to a good start, it's tough for a lot of young guys to really get it going. But the fact that he's put up now almost 20 points, Lafreniere, it's pretty good. The issue with the Rangers not making it this year is last year they looked so good. And when you see a team have a good season, you look at like projections, right? Look at what Panarin did a year ago. And obviously he's still having a great season, even though he had to leave the team this year with 58 points. But this is going to be a good team. Like, I'm telling you right now, I was a little surprised with Philly this year in the East, but the Rangers were 50-50 on making the playoffs. They're going to be good for a lot of years, though.
We'll hope for the best for Nick Foligno. Maybe the Leafs will give us a bit of an update later on today. Leafs don't play again until Thursday night when they take on the Habs at Scotiabank Arena. Got the Blue Jays late tonight, a 9:40 first pitch on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and on Sportsnet. And the Raptors with a must win if you're still all in on them making this play-in tournament. The Raptors with an absolute must win in L.A. against the Clippers. We'll break it all down tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock. This is for you, Kevin Barker. Little George Michael on the way out the door. It'll be a wet Tuesday. Good shows next. Enjoy your day.